understand some of the political movements of the moment since about 2016. It's the hope. Every time it's the hope. And there is hope today that most of the world has woken up to the absurdity of treating Donald Trump like a normal politician, treating a deranged liar like somebody who is capable of telling the truth or behaving in a sensible fashion. It probably won't last. The fact that he was lying through his teeth yesterday is visible from space, but the cheerleaders will no doubt be back in position soon. But what the hell happens next?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Cabinet Minister has pushed back on calls to back drilling in the North Sea to reinforce the UK's energy security. Global oil prices have spiked since the start of the US-Israeli war against Iran 3 weeks ago. The Labour government has banned new licences in the North Sea since coming into power. Speaking to LBC's Call the Cabinet this morning, the Business Secretary Peter Kyle said issuing new permits isn't the way forward.
We've got to look at what resources we have domestically into the very long term. As I said before, even if we extract, because we're worried about the short-term impact that we have from the conflict that's in the Middle East at the moment with Iran, what we have to do is look to where the long-term sustainable energy generation is going to come from.
The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, is preparing to outline plans later today aimed at guarding against price rises sparked by the Iran war. The White House says plans for US talks with Iran remain fluid, adding that any speculation should not be deemed as final. It follows unconfirmed reports that the Vice President, J.D. Vance, could meet Iranian officials in Pakistan for discussions later this week. Yesterday, Tehran denied Donald Trump's suggestion that talks to end the conflict were held on Monday. The Met Police is investigating whether an arson attack on 4 ambulances owned by the Jewish community had links to Iran. The vehicles were destroyed after being set alight in Golders Green in northwest London yesterday. Vets will have to cap prescription fees at £21 and publish price lists, among new measures coming into force later this year. The competition watchdog carried out an in-depth investigation and found that prices had been rising at almost twice the rate of inflation. Animal Welfare Minister Baroness Hayman has spoken to LBC. She says pet owners were being left in the dark.
We're really keen to improve transparency, because without transparency, you can't have choice. Because you need to know what different practices are charging, and actually also what the internet is charging, in order to make choices about how much you are going to be paying for your pet care.
And developers will be required to install heat pumps in all new homes in England as part of new planning requirements. Solar panels which plug into the mains are also to be made available to buy from supermarkets as part of government efforts to speed up the transition to renewable energy. In this city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 17 at 9,876. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather. An unsettled day with heavy rain for the north of England, Scotland and Wales. Cloudy but dry for the south of England. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero with Compensa Market. Take it away, Sergey.
I need a Nero. I'm holding up for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong, and it's gotta taste good, and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simple way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries, app only 2 codes per day, exclusions and T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten, and in a break with tradition, I'm going to start the show with Idiot's Corner today. If you are not familiar with this programme, or indeed this feature, it doesn't happen much. Back in the heydays of Brexit, I used to get bombarded by people who seemed to share a brain cell. And whose lack of understanding of even relatively simple issues was matched only by their certainty that they were right. We may have a little look at the deal, for example, that the European Union has just signed with Australia and compare it to the one that Boris Johnson belched upon Britain not too long ago as a timely reminder of what happens when you put idiots in charge of important things. But Idiot's Corner, And I make no apology for the slightly undiplomatic language, as you will understand when you meet the latest entrant into Idiot's Corner. It's a little place that we reserve, maybe no more than once or twice a show, maximum three or four times a show. Sometimes we go for days without putting anyone in it, because these people now tend, I think, to gravitate towards echo chambers on Facebook and Twitter and what have you. But when we get an absolute peach of a plum, if that's not a mixed metaphor, then we have to throw the gates open. So massive thanks. And also, I've been falling out of love with it a bit lately, because you sort of find yourself wondering whether some people are so keen, so desperate for the oxygen of attention. I mean, they can go for weeks without ever talking to another human being, in real life. But you wonder whether they're so desperate for the oxygen of attention that they deliberately submit idiotic texts in order to gull me. Luckily, I can press a button, as you know, in the studio and see every text that you have ever sent into the studio, whoever is presenting, going back in some cases years. So I can establish pretty quickly whether somebody is a genuine idiot or just pretending to be an idiot for attention, which of course makes them an idiot, but not the kind of idiot who demands a position in Idiot's Corner. Oh, and so to Danny. Danny's been in touch. Are you ready for this? Mentioned Trump before your show even started, James. You must be a weirdo to talk about someone that much that you don't even know. Lol. That is a fascinating approach to current affairs-based radio, Danny. I mean, I'm just trying to imagine what the show would sound like if I confined the conversation entirely to people that I actually know. I mean, I give Keith the occasional mention, but I'm not going to lie to you. Keith and I are, I hope, affectionate colleagues, but we don't know a great deal about each other's personal lives. I can mention Eleanor in passing. I suppose I could talk about my children or my wife. I could talk about my late father if you want, Danny. I knew him pretty well. I could go back to my school days. I don't know. I mean, what would you like me to... Who do you think I should be talking about? Lads I went to school with in 1986, Danny? Or the man who is the leader of the free world at the moment and embarked upon a war built entirely upon lies and idiocy? Because this is a news-based programme. Do I need to spell any of those words for you, pal? Let's just run through one newspaper today and see how far into the newspaper we have to get before I meet... I wonder if it's Danny Kruger that sent that. Anyway, I wonder how far into the newspaper we have to get before I find a story that involves someone I know really well, in which case I would, in Danny's slightly strange worldview, be able to talk about it. France migrants agreement held up by Mahmoud's tougher terms. I've never met Shabana Mahmoud, mate, so I can't really talk about that. I've been to France... I've been to France, Danny. Does that mean that I can... Can I talk about France? You irredeemable flump. Can I talk about... I mean, I don't live there, though, so, you know, lol. Why would you be talking about a country that you don't even live in? Lol. Tehran linked to arson attack on ambulances. It's a story I want to talk about more later this week for a whole bunch of reasons, but in the first instance, I've never been to Tehran, and I don't know, or I wasn't personally acquainted with any of the people or vehicles involved in this hideous story. So I can't talk about that one either in Danny's worldview. I don't know how long we're going to keep this one up for. Ex-Tory Justice Secretary to lead Amos murder review. That's an important story, and I think a very good appointment. But I have not met the former Conservative Justice Secretary who has been appointed to conduct this investigation, Sir Robert Buckland, and I haven't met Shabana Mahmood, who has made the appointment, and I don't think have the pleasure of meeting Sir David Amos before he was murdered, so we can't do that one. Well, here's a story, mate, about whales, not the space, the mammals, sperm whales. Try not to snigger, Danny, I know you find that kind of thing very funny, but sperm whales butting heads in the ocean. I can't talk about that, mate, because I don't know these whales, so we can't talk about the whales. Netflix stole my French Jaws, never heard of him, can't talk about that. There's a capybara on the loose in London, Danny. It's escaped from the zoo. It's escaped from Marwell Zoo in Hampshire, but I don't know this capybara, so I can't talk about that story. Calls to reinstate scientist in puberty blocker trial round. Never heard of them. Can't talk about that. More on that story. Iran believed to be down to the last 1,000. Can't talk about that, because I ain't ever met an Ayatollah. Panic buying warnings. Well, can't talk about that. Processed food harms fertility in both men and women. Can't talk about that, because it's research conducted in the Netherlands, and although I've been there, Danny, I can't claim to know any of these researchers. Harry, privacy trial told off, hacked off, con. I mean, I know these people. I've met Baroness Lawrence. Can I? Should we talk? I mean, I could talk about that. Oh, it's a live court case, though, so there's limits on what we could and couldn't talk about. And I don't know them very well anyway, so I don't know that I should be talking about them. Lol. And we're already up to about page 20. And you, Danny, are too thick to listen to this programme, mate. I'm sorry. I know that sounds a bit cruel and a little bit unkind, but I think it is doing damage to you in ways that you're not even noticing anymore. So if you're turning on your radio and listening to Current Affairs coverage and you are thinking to yourself, why is this person talking about human beings that he doesn't know personally extremely well, then I think you need to just downgrade your media intake by about 143 IQ points. Anyway, have a lovely day. 10 minutes after 10 is the time. Back to the biggest story in the world at the moment, albeit one that involves people I don't have a deep and intimate personal knowledge of. Donald Trump yesterday proved what many of us have been saying for a very long time. I think proved beyond any reasonable doubt that he is a deranged idiot who has no idea what he's doing. He is possessed of a sort of atavistic, primal skill set by which, by feeding his own appetites all the time and having become over the years an absolutely, I mean, almost like the apotheosis of self-interest and self-regard. I don't know whether you call it narcissism or whether you call it pathology or whatever you might call it. You look at somebody who somehow manages to achieve great things by only ever feeding his own hideous and insatiable appetites. Whether the appetites are for power, for money, for status, for praise, whatever it may be, it is insatiable and it is unhinged. So we saw yesterday that he will even lie about wars. He will even lie in ways that everybody paying attention will see as blatant lies. He will lie about things that are, he's so now confident in the sycophancy of his supporters, both in his regime and outside of it that he feels even more empowered than ever before to tell lies that are not even halfway around the world before the truth has got its trousers on. They are lies so egregious and so huge that they can't even get through the door of the room that he's in before the truth comes crashing down around him. But so complete is the sycophancy with which he is surrounded that nobody ever really points out to him just how obvious the lies he's telling today have become. I want you to listen to this little clip of a conference yesterday where Stephen Miller had praised Donald Trump in ludicrous terms for a straight 5 minutes, at which point he turns to Kash Patel, who runs the FBI, and literally says to him, "So, Kash, see if you can top that. That's a tough one, Kash." I don't know if you're familiar with King Lear, but there's a scene in Act 1, Scene 1 of King Lear that's absolutely heartbreaking. It involves the old king, who is a bit deranged, but he's not yet an idiot, asking his three daughters to tell him how much they love him. And, spoiler alert, only one person loves him in that room, and that's Cordelia, his youngest daughter. The other two sisters, Goneril and Regan, can't really wait for him to be dead. They've got their eyes on their inheritance already. One of them's married to a monstrous man. The other, happily, is not. But they queue up to lavish praise upon King Lear. Even in Shakespeare's time, this was an exercise so transparent with regard to the vanity of the monarch, the groundlings in the theatre would have been laughing at the king, even as his own daughters queued up to lavish ludicrous and exorbitant praise upon him. And then his youngest daughter just says quite mildly, you're my daddy, so I love you, like a daughter should love her daddy. That's not very Shakespearean language, I grant you, but I can't remember the full quote. And it's comedy. It's tragicomedy, because it sets the family up for a hideous denouement. But even when Shakespeare was writing, it was a trope so familiar and so transparent that everybody in the theatre knew exactly what was happening. Donald Trump's doing it in 2026. Have a listen to this.
"So, Cash, see if you can top that. I don't know. That's a tough one, Cash.
That is tough. You know, Mr. President, as I look around this venue, I see and I'm reminded again why we have the greatest warriors on God's green earth, the men and women serving in uniform, the men and women serving and wearing the badge, and law enforcement, our police, our sheriffs around the state of Tennessee. I'm reminded that Americans exist to protect this country day in and day out, and they've done it like we've done it here. But what we didn't have was you. We didn't have a commander-in-chief who backed the blue, who resourced the blue, who funded the military, who did whatever it takes to safeguard every single life. And here in Memphis, Tennessee, you have put on a show for the world. You have allowed us to go out there and capture gangbangers, rapists, murderers, drug dealers at record historic levels.
Oh, boy. So we have a little listen to just how impressive a character this man that Kash Patel is talking about truly is.
What about the Strait of Hormuz? Who's going to be in control of
that? That'll be opened very soon, if this works.
How soon? And who's in control of it? Will Iran still be able to control the flow of oil?
Be jointly controlled.
By whom?
Maybe me. Maybe me.
You want the United States to be in control?
Me and the Ayatollah, whoever the Ayatollah is, whoever the next Ayatollah.
You think I'm exaggerating? You know that I'm not. That's the President of the United States of America trying to cover up the fact that he was lying through his teeth yesterday about negotiations with Iran that haven't even taken place, but which he was forced to resile from because Iran didn't respond to the deadline he set for them to reopen the Strait of Hormuz that is not yet reopened. How on earth did this happen? Or how can we be confident that the negotiations he claimed yesterday had taken place haven't taken place at all?
And there'll also be a form of a very serious form of a regime change. Now, in all fairness, everybody's been killed from the regime. They're really starting off. There's automatically a regime change. But we're dealing with some people that I find to be very reasonable, very solid. The people within know who they are. They're very respected. And maybe one of them will be exactly what we're looking for. Look at Venezuela, how well that's working. We are doing so well in Venezuela with oil and with the relationship between the president-elect and us. And maybe we find somebody like that in Iran.
So yesterday he was conducting high-level negotiations, and today he's killed all the people that he could have been conducting high-level negotiations with. But one thing upon which we can all agree.
You know, our country now is respected all over the world. A year and a half ago, we were a laughing stock. We were a laughing stock. The king of Saudi Arabia told me a year and a half ago, he said, President, I can't believe what's happened to America. 1 year ago, you were a laughing stock. Nobody thought you could ever, ever survive. Now you're the hottest country. Use that expression. He said, now you're the hottest country anywhere in the world.
So let's just be clear on that. America and Donald Trump are no longer a laughing stock.
We're
dealing really.
Whose idea was it?
Mine. That was mine.
And can I ask you? You said
that was like the paperclip. You know the story of the paperclip? 182 years ago, a man discovered the paperclip. It was so simple. And everybody that looked at it say, why didn't I think of that?
And that is the world today.
LBC.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
My name is Paul, and this is my NHS story. I started to notice that the hip was becoming numb. The GP referred me for an X-ray. And just being informed, being kept in the loop, I feel much better in myself, and I feel confident about how the future is going to unfold.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
All of which leads us to the question that is most urgent, of course, and that is, what on earth happens next? Just one little postscript to yesterday's programme, when we were just looking at the questions of what is going on rather than what happens next, and the suggestion that some of Trump's motivation might have been financial was mooted by one caller. And I had to confess that my allergy to dead cats and conspiracy theories in the context of Donald Trump is diminishing daily, in that anything is possible. You know, yesterday, and lots of other people picked up on this point after I'd come off air, I noticed, picked up on this point as well. I'm not claiming they were following me. But the idea that you are now left with an almost an impossible choice when it comes to who to trust, who is telling the truth, the Iranian regime, the theocratic dictatorship in Tehran, or the President of the United States of America. One of them says we've had amazing negotiations. The other one says we haven't even had a postcard off him. Who do you believe? And there's no real way anybody honest can say that that's an easy question to answer. You're going to lean one way or the other, according mostly to vibes and instincts. And it shouldn't be that way. The President of the United States of America should be someone who can at least be taken at face value by his own allies. But no, yesterday there will be people throughout American politics, throughout the world, who just think that the Iranians, hideous though that regime is, are probably telling the truth here, and Trump is probably lying. The day ticks ever closer, doesn't it, when they have to start talking about the Epstein files again to distract from the mess that they've made in Iran. So one of the other postscripts from yesterday's show is about the claim that it was financially motivated, and I did see stories about huge sums of money being essentially placed moments before the announcement in ways that would accrue enormous profits when the markets temporarily recovered from the doldrums as a consequence of Trump's announcement. It gets worse. They've identified 8 newly created accounts, all created around the 21st of March, which laid bets on a US-Iran ceasefire over the weekend that appeared to show signs of insider knowledge, according to experts. So again, I can't believe that I'm saying this, but how shocked would you be if the kind of people in the room where you just heard them competing to lavish the most ludicrous and simply and obviously untrue praise upon Donald Trump, how surprised would you be if they were, or people like that, were involved in making huge amounts of money, I mean, illegally, probably, immorally, definitely, out of incredibly sensitive government policy and government information. It is absolutely extraordinary what is going on. And again, much of the media isn't yet ready to acknowledge it, although it got a lot closer yesterday than it has done in years. So what happens next? I mean, I'm tempted just to put my feet up and wait for you to ring me. I've noticed, and part of it is because I've got so much to say, but there has been a growing reluctance to get involved in this conversation as it has gone on, because it becomes harder and harder to say anything with substance or certainty, except the stuff that I say every day, which is essentially you can't say anything with substance or certainty. But as we look over the horizon, as we look at what may or may not happen next, then you can draw upon all manner of insights and ideas. Because two things can be stated with absolute certainty. Donald Trump cannot be trusted, and Israel now will continue to attack, is continuing to attack Iran and Lebanon, even after Donald Trump appeared to announce some sort of ceasefire yesterday, albeit one that is specific to power plants. So just to recap on what we think we know, you have a war, probably illegal, undertaken by the United States of America and Israel, right? You have a very strong suggestion from Donald Trump's Secretary of State that they only got involved because they realized they weren't going to be able to stop Benjamin Netanyahu from doing it. You have, if you're a fan of such things, the fact that they claimed 9 months ago they had obliterated Iran's capability to do anything harmful to them, but then they come back 9 months later to do it all again, to re-obliterate, if that's even a verb. But bearing in mind what Marco Rubio said and then unsaid, because that's how Trump's regime works, they'll tell you something on a Monday, then they'll tell you the opposite on a Tuesday, even when it's the same person now. They don't even bother lining up somebody different from the regime to contradict what somebody different from the regime said yesterday. So you know that under that analysis, Netanyahu, if he was ever really bound by the concerns of either international law or international alliances, is now just pursuing whatever project he pleases entirely independently. The bombing of Lebanon going criminally underreported in this country, largely as a consequence of the attention that is being paid to Iran. He is going to carry on. And I can't quite see, and this is the thing that perhaps scares me the most, I can't quite see how Donald Trump's United States of America is going to be able to exert any pressure upon them to stop doing what they're doing. I don't know whether or not they can carry on without the United States of America on a scale that would be comparable with the scale they are now. Another thing that we know, thousands of Marines are currently making their way to the Middle East. Another thing we know, Donald Trump has been humiliated. I think the biggest plus you can say is that his character is so weird that he can move on from a humiliation and pretend it never happened in some ways much quicker than other people can. But then you remember that he bears grudges in some cases that go back decades. So a PhD needs to be written on why he can leave some humiliations alone and why some will continue to rankle and sting decades after the actual event. I don't think he's going to hold this humiliation against Iran, because it's not really Iran that have humiliated him. So you've got Marines heading to the Gulf. You've got Israel continuing to act with abandon, you know, pursuing policies in Lebanon now that are similar to the policies they pursued in Gaza, where they committed genocide. You've got the rest of the world waking up belatedly to the fact that you can't trust a word that Donald Trump says. And you've got the fact that he is almost certainly incapable of reopening the Strait of Hormuz through force. Those seem to me to be the five big pieces on the table. You're welcome to add more. Listen, I used to be a showbiz journalist. I'm by absolutely no stretch of the imagination the be-all and end-all of conversations like this. In other words, you are just as qualified as I am to contribute. The only requirement for entry is that you've been paying attention and you care. Sadly, there are plenty of people in my profession who neither pay attention nor care, but I know that you do. So the five things that are in place, I think, would be Trump's humiliation, Benjamin Netanyahu's impunity and his continuing attacks, even after a so-called ceasefire has been announced, the thousands of Marines that are making their way to that part of the world, the impossibility, I think, of reopening the Strait of Hormuz using military force, and special prize for whoever could remember what the fifth point was that we've just cobbled together, but it's going to be somewhere in the space occupied by whoever is now in charge in Iran, isn't it? So it's the lies. So you've got the humiliation and you've got the absolute untrustworthiness. The humiliation of yesterday's climb down, but also the permanent untrustworthiness of everything that he says and does. And then you've got the thousands of Marines who are making their way towards that part of the world. Then you've got the impossibility of reopening the Strait of Hormuz militarily. That's something that might be negotiable or debatable. And then you've got Netanyahu's determination to continue with his attacks on Iran and, of course, Lebanon, whatever the rest of the world thinks about it, or whatever the rest of the world up to and including Donald Trump tells him about it. So what do you think is going to happen next? What is, for the world now, the best case scenario? And I don't like asking this question, but I think it's important that we do. What is the worst case scenario? I can tell you that Gulf states, who have regarded Iran as a hornet's nest hanging over the peninsula since the Islamic resolution, are now worried about a repeat of Suez if America bails out now. The Times reports today that Israel and the US have now stirred up that hornet's nest again, and the world is feeling the blowback as Iran cripples global energy supplies by closing the Strait of Hormuz and targeting refineries in the Gulf. So what is the best case scenario for the world, for you, for me, not for Donald Trump, but for the world, for the Iranian people, perhaps, given that they are best case scenario at the moment, is that they return to the hideous status quo that they were living under before. And what is the worst case scenario? How much history would you need to draw meaningful parallels with the Suez crisis? And between those two poles, the best case scenario and the worst case scenario, the truth probably lies. The likely outcome probably sits between those two extremes. What is, for you now, A or the likely outcome of this absolutely almighty, and I think that if we lived in a vaguely just universe, heads, professional and metaphorical heads, would be rolling over the abject failure to recognise that all of this was completely and utterly predictable. Every single nanosecond of this unfolding horror was predictable and visible for space for one very simple reason. Donald Trump remains a deranged liar, and anybody making excuses for him or praising him is complicit in what is now happening. And what is now happening is, according to the people who know and care the most, an oil crisis worse than the 1970s and a diplomatic and political nightmare comparable potentially to what happened in Suez. So what the hell happens next? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Speaking to LBC, the business secretary has pushed back on growing calls to rethink plans to stop drilling for oil and gas in the North Sea. Global prices have spiked since the start of the Iran war, increasing pressure to rethink domestic production. The White House says sensitive diplomatic discussions are taking place on how to end the war in the Middle East. President Trump said yesterday that talks with Tehran had made good progress, but Iran denied the claims. And vets will have to cap prescription fees at £21 and publish price lists among new measures coming into force later this year. The competition watchdog carried out an investigation and found that prices had been rising at almost twice the rate of inflation. LBC weather, an unsettled day with heavy rain for northern England, Scotland and Wales. Cloudy but dry for the south of England, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC.
My name is Kathleen, and this is my NHS story. Having a persistent cough is quite socially embarrassing, so I went to see a respiratory nurse who sent me off for an X-ray at my local CDC, and they were offering Sunday appointments and evening appointments, which was great.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialised in installing our fully internal aircon systems throughout London, with no mess, no fuss, and no external condenser. And from April the 10th to the 19th, come and meet me and the team at the Ideal Home Show, London Olympia. Daddy cool. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £43 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Whoop whoop! Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
33 minutes after 10. So that's my list. The humiliation that Trump has suffered, more as an illustration of the broader situation than as necessarily a key factor in what happens next. The fact that Benjamin Netanyahu is continuing to attack Iran and, of course, Lebanon, despite the sort of partial ceasefire that Donald Trump announced yesterday. The thousands of US Marines that are currently making their way to that part of the world for as yet not entirely discernible reasons. The impossibility, according to most experts, of reopening the Strait of Hormuz using force alone. And the abject unreliability and dishonesty of Donald Trump. With all those five factors in place, and the key players being, at the moment, Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump with a side order of the Iranian regime, whoever is in charge of it. What the hell happens next? 10:34 is the time. Hit those numbers now, you will get through. What on earth happens next? Harry's in Plymouth. Harry, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I pick up on one of your points, which was about, you know, who do we believe? And I can't believe I would say this, but I actually believe the Iranian regime about what happened yesterday. I think that Trump's going to pull out gradually, and I think he's going to claim a victory. I don't think he cares about what the reaction of the press and the world leaders are, because I think he's quite happy to lie to them barefaced.
You're not alone, actually. I'm trying to find him. I can't just go. I've done half an hour of uninterrupted talking, so my brain's a little bit frazzled. But Ron Filipowski, is it, who runs Made Us Touch? It is. He used to be a Republican state and federal prosecutor, editor-in-chief of Made Us News, a former Marine, a former attorney, and he made precisely that point yesterday, that he can't quite believe, particularly with the background that we've just described, that he finds himself essentially tossing a coin on the question of who's telling the truth, the United States president or the theocratic propaganda outlet that is in Iran. And I mean, good God, that's incredible, isn't it?
It is absolutely incredible. And I think generally Trump is a victim of groupthink, you know, confirmation bias. You know, he's not hearing any challenge on anything he does, is he?
God, no. I mean, we saw that yesterday. We saw the press conference. I was almost tempted to play the 5 minutes that Stephen Miller devoted to telling to blowing smoke up Donald Trump's backside on international live television. It's beyond the Hunger Games. It's beyond the sort of Hollywood dystopias that we used to laugh at.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, the fact that he is kind of a paradox, isn't it, that he's so kind of out there on his own social media and whatnot, you know, so public in that, but he doesn't listen to anything. It's
creating an alternative reality. I found that quote from Ron Filipowski. Never in my life have I believed Iran state media over our own government.
Oh, wow.
Until now, that's not being unpatriotic. It's having a brain that functions.
Yeah, I mean, I can't actually believe that we're having this conversation, James, if I'm honest.
Well, that's why so many people aren't. Partly because, of course, they didn't see it coming, in which case they're embarrassed, and partly because it's a little bit too scary to contemplate some days. There's a story in the news about moles. I don't know if you've seen it, Harry, about mole exterminators hanging up mole carcasses to show the farmers what a great job they've done. And there was a little bit of me this morning that looked at Eleanor in a plaintive fashion and said, do you think we could talk about moles today? Do we have to talk about him again? And then you remember what matters most to the world. If you've got the IEA saying that this is an oil crisis worse than the 70s and the Gulf states saying this could be the next Suez and Keir Starmer pointing out that the impact on our cost of living everywhere from petrol to potatoes is, well, maybe not potatoes actually, but from petrol. Yeah, of course, because you've got to transport potatoes. Yeah. Everything's going to be hit. So your start of a 10, how's it going to end? What's going to happen? Well, or what's going to happen next?
I think that I genuinely think he's going to pull out. He's going to try and curry the favour of the American people by saying, you know, we did a job, we were successful, we were glorious, all the kind of language he uses.
It's been a glorious victory. And the way he talks about regime change in Venezuela when they've replaced the last dictator with his own deputy.
It's ridiculous.
And started describing her as the president-elect when there hasn't been an election. That's usually the way that you describe somebody who's won an election but hasn't actually been given the office yet. So he's changing the meaning of words all the time. Therefore, anybody balking at the extremity of what you're suggesting needs to give their head a wobble. Because, of course, he will claim enormous victory, even as the scale of the defeat is crystal clear. I never really got... Thank you, Harry. It's a lovely start. Also, about time someone interrupted me. James in Gloucester will be up next. But before that, I've got a few other things I want to get off my chest. I never really understood those bits. There's a lot of 1984 that I wouldn't ever say it felt fanciful when I read it. And remember that Orwell had watched the rise of autocratic regimes. He'd watched the rise, most obviously, of Joseph Stalin in Russia. And the bits of it I didn't get, like the slogan oxymoron, the oxymoronic slogan, as opposed to the moronic sloganeer, who is of course the man that we're talking about today. But the oxymoronic slogan, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength, war is peace. I never got that. I always thought, look, I'm not thick, right, and I like books. But I don't quite understand this bit. And I must have read 1984 half a dozen times over the years. And most of it just, you just absorb it into your intellectual bloodstream. It changes the way you think about the world. But the scale of that oxymoron, that three-word complete contradiction, the fact that you can say something utterly polar opposite in a three-word sentence. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. I'm not even sure that it had become completely crystal clear to me how powerful that was until about 10:39 on Tuesday, March the 24th, 2026, talking to Harry in Plymouth. Because that's where we are now. That is where we are now. Negotiations, no negotiations. Victory is loss. Loss is victory. Laughing stock no longer, while everybody's laughing. I mean, here we are, which possibly makes it impossible to say with any confidence what on earth is going to happen next. But that's not stopping me from asking you. James is in Gloucester. James, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello. I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago. Good to speak to you again.
Likewise.
I just wanted to say that I think that we're in for a protracted war here. I think it's going to go on for at least...
Straight away, second call, a polar opposite view, and I can't argue with either of you. That's how bonkers things have become.
I know, it's crazy times. The reason I say that is because there appears to be no obvious off-ramp for Trump here. And I just feel like the Israelis might be in the driving seat when it comes to this war, because... I think it's become an existential fight for them, so they can't really see the Americans pulling out. And just on
it took about 40 minutes yesterday after Trump said he'd extended the sort of 5-day deadline or the 5-day ceasefire. It took 40 minutes for the IDF to come out and say it had just begun another wave of strikes targeting infrastructure of the Iranian terror regime across Tehran, and that they would continue to do so in line with Israeli government directives until told otherwise. So the idea that Trump either wants or possibly can stay Benjamin Netanyahu's hand appears to have left the building.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that Bibi is in a unique situation where, as you've touched on before, he kind of needs this war to keep him out of jail, I think.
And it's got 80% support in Israel, this war against Iran. 80% support, give or take.
But, you know, the support in America is very low, and it's only going to get lower if boots are put on the ground and they start suffering casualties. It's only going to get worse. But just on the flipping back and forth with Trump, I think it's quite clear that a lot of the time he's trying to manipulate the markets. I don't think it's any coincidence that, you know, the time limit was 5 days when the markets close for the weekend, and then they can ramp things up perhaps over the weekend and then, deal with it next week.
Is it called normalcy bias? I think the Americans call it normalcy bias, and we probably should call it normality bias because we're not American. But I can't let... It's almost like I've nearly said to you then, I think that's a symptom, not a cause. I think Donald Trump makes a decision based upon other things, deranged idiocy, most obviously. And then either he or people around him see an opportunity to make some money. I still can't quite sign up completely to the idea that they would use this exclusively as an opportunity to make a lot of money, that they are so utterly bereft of humanity and decency, integrity, honesty, that on no level does any voice inside their head say, hang on a minute, this is a World War III scenario. We can't be treating it as a personal piggy bank. And so I would meet you halfway and say, I think it might be a symptom. I think when word gets out about what he's planning to do, then people move into the market that is going to be created. But the idea that he makes announcements like this deliberately and cynically and solely to move the market, I'm not quite there yet, mate.
I got to be honest, that's not what I meant. I agree with you on that. But I think he makes decisions and does things and then deals with the fallout later by saying things that are, you know, totally contrary to what he said in the first place.
Freedom is slavery. Yeah. Ignorance is strength. War is peace.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, there you go. So you think he's too bedded in, and Netanyahu's role in all of this is too crucial, too important, and the first caller very much of the view that he's going to call it quits, get out of there, pretend he's won when he hasn't. And who knows? You see, you can't, neither of you, as in those two callers, I can't argue with either of you. But equally, I can't even work out who I agree with more, because I can't tell the difference between what I want, as in my feelings, and what I think, as in my contemplations. So my heart says, please, make it stop. Let him pretend he's won. God help the people of Iran, who return probably to a worse situation than they were in before. But the fuel crisis will move into recovery, and those of us on this side of the world and elsewhere will not feel as acute a consequence of this mess as we otherwise would have done. So that is my heart, I think. That's what I want, but what I think will happen, again, I'm back to doing the thing I said I was going to stop doing. Trying to make sense of a deranged idiot when you can't make sense of deranged idiots. 10:45 is the time. 03456060973 is the number you need. So now you've heard the two, not quite polar extremes, but you see how big the goal mouth is. One of us is going to be right. One of us in a month or a year is going to be able to ring up and say, oh, by the way, I got that completely right, didn't I? And it could be you, but only if you get involved. Mary Trump, Donald Trump's niece, I don't know whether this was posted before or after the opening to yesterday's show, but she's written in the last couple of days, in 40 minutes, Donald said, the Strait of Hormuz isn't closed, but he wants it reopened. We're not at war with Iran, but our allies are cowards for not helping. He wants a ceasefire, but he doesn't want one, and he has also declared victory three times. Such clarity, writes his own niece. Such leadership.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Money is tight. It cannot go to people who can afford to pay their energy bills or afford another 30 quid on it a month. Because if you're going out and you're working every day, the last thing I think you want to feel that your money is going towards is to pay for the heating bill of the private dwelling of someone who can really actually afford it.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
McGriddles, a new McDonald's breakfast. So it's maple syrup infused. It's sweet, then it's savoury. Because the sausage, you know, and the cheese and the egg. Oh, it's got the golden arches stamped on it too. Make that make sense. It's hard to put into words, but... Until 11 a.m, subject to availability. Fees apply to delivery orders while stocks last.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the art and design industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Keo, an art and design student in year 12.
As an art student, we get the chance to work on our own pieces, either in the studio or using the digital software. Some of my work has also been shown in galleries, and last week I got the chance to attend a design agency to learn more about my future career.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. Globalacademy.com.
Ugh. Drizzly drive to the office. Ever wanted to just shove some bits in a bag? Hop on a plane. And land somewhere magnifique? Well, with Kayak Explore, it's easier than ever. Whatever your budget, wherever you want to go, simply set the amount you want to spend and Kayak finds flights that fit. Easy breezy. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
My name is Beverly and this is my NHS story. I had to make regular journeys to my local CDC for blood tests because I had lymphoma. I think it really helps to know that you've got somewhere local. It was really a godsend.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 10:48. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. There was some other news this morning. I need to apologise to Danny. I do know Dimitri Grozobinski, who will be joining us shortly to discuss this. But if you weren't listening at the top of the show, Danny's very cross that I talk about people I don't know very well, like Donald Trump. I shouldn't be talking about people who I don't personally know. I don't know any of the people in this clip. I want to make that absolutely clear and apologise to Danny for once again covering current affairs that involves people I'm not personally related to or acquainted with intimately. But I remember when Boris Johnson's so-called trade deal, I think that Liz Truss negotiated it and Boris Johnson inked it. And there was a dinner in the final moments where the Australian delegation was dining with the British delegation. And whether or not Boris Johnson had had too many sherries, they kind of got him to sign something that was an even bigger giveaway than what Liz Truss had already agreed to. And the Australian delegation ran into, I think they faxed it just to make sure that it was actually, you know, signed and sealed before Boris Johnson told anybody who understood what was going on what a disaster he'd just done. But I mention all of this because there's some news breaking this morning that you're probably not going to read about in all of the newspapers or hear about on all of the radio shows that told you Brexit was going to be a brilliant idea, that reminded me of what happened when Australian media started working through the reality of the deal that Boris Johnson signed with Australia.
Free trade agreement with the UK. Some British products will become cheaper. Exciting news. I just wonder, what does Britain actually have to offer us? I mean, there's a beautiful MGs. Yeah, if you can imagine the top down Matty riding. Here we are. This is you riding to the Callide Power Station earlier this morning with the top down. Your hair blowing freely in the wind. Oh, hang on. The MGs owned by a Chinese company.
Yeah, that's right. That's
so true. What else do they have? There's black pudding, Cumberland sausages. That's about it, isn't it?
Carlos, there's like Spice Girls CDs, a nice cup of English breakfast tea. Don't be so hard on the Brits.
All right, name one good export from the UK, Matty.
It's hard, isn't it? I suppose. The peas pies. I don't know. Yeah, it's very hard. But this is about what we sell to them, Carl. Like, yeah, so it's a good thing for us. Good all thing right. for us because we get to sell more beef, and that's great for everybody in Australia.
I played that out a few years ago, just after the deal had kicked in, because that's why Australian media was talking about it. And the first email I got was from a bloke that used to run EMI in Australia. And he said, no, we make our own Spice Girls CDs, mate. So, up with that sort of thing. Dimitri Grozobinski is here because the European Union has just signed a trade deal with Australia, a free trade agreement. And I thought we'd do a quick thumbnail comparison on what the residents of the European Union can look forward to compared to what the residents of the United Kingdom had secured on their behalf by Boris Johnson and Liz Truss.
Hi, James.
Hello, mate.
Well, this has been a deal the EU and Australia have been negotiating for a very long time, and it's been stuck for a very long time, basically for one simple reason. Australian farmers wanted a lot more access to European consumers than the European Union was comfortable giving to them.
Sounds familiar.
It is familiar. And you can, you know, I think it's really important for your listeners to separate two different things here. There's a policy debate, which is how much should we tax foreign food to help our farmers, that's a legitimate conversation. You can argue that back and forth. You know, there's an argument for doing it. There's an argument for not doing it. And there's the negotiations, which were held on the basis of the fact that the UK and the EU in this case really wanted to tariff Australian food, and Australia wanted them to stop. That was the basis for the negotiations. And the European Union has given away much less ability to tax Australian imports than the UK did.
How much less?
Almost exponentially less.
Well, give me some numbers. We like numbers.
Sure. So in keeping these numbers in mind, keep in mind that the European Union is about 450 million people.
Yeah.
And the UK is substantially less than that. So
that's not an opinion. That's not an opinion. That's counting. Go on.
Listen, this is the kind of expertise you only get from someone with my pedigree.
Precisely that, yes.
Let me give you an example. Beef is probably the headline number. What the UK deal does is on day one, Australia gets 35,000 tons of beef into the UK. And over 15 years, that rises to 110,000 and then becomes unlimited.
Good Lord.
Basically, over 15 years from the start of the deal, the UK kind of gives away its ability to tariff Australian beef. By comparison, the European Union has created 30,000 tons of total new access, of which about half will still get some tariff, and which is conditioned on that beef being grass-fed rather than feedlot. So it's about, it starts off as less than what the UK gave away on day one and ends up being significantly less.
So it starts off at about half of what the UK gave away on, but you divide this by the population totals. So, I mean, word exponential. So it's 16,830 tons of tariff-free access for 450 million European Union consumers versus almost double that, 35,000 for...
And that's on day one.
And that, and then after 15 years,
it ends up unlimited. Yeah.
So if British farmers who were not in favour of Brexit as a homogenous group, we should probably make that clear. It's one of the consequences of having bent media that they were always portrayed as such. But their actual voting was not far off the national average on this. But British beef farmers were royally screwed by this deal, and European beef farmers are probably not going to be breaking open the champagne this morning, but they're in a hell of a much better position than their British counterparts.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right, and I think we should be transparent and clear here. The Australian FTA has been enforced for a little while now, and it hasn't wiped out British farming. There were apocalyptic predictions, and of course, those didn't pan out. That's not how things work. But it certainly added to the competition and pressure that farmers face and that they perhaps feel they don't need.
Do you remember that story? You probably do, about Boris Johnson essentially rolling over at dinner and giving away even more than Liz Truss had negotiated?
Yes, it's a story I've heard from multiple sources, some of them quite close to the negotiations. This gets quite technical, but basically, towards the very end of the deal, there was a disagreement about how you measure carcass weight.
Mm.
So some technical details that had quite large commercial implications. And what's apparently happened is that at the very end, they put it to Boris Johnson, who is not famously a details guy. And he's just like, carcass weight, for example, whatever, like, I want to sign this thing. And as you say, perhaps a few glasses of very fine Australian red wine may have been involved, but that part is apocryphal and sort of...
Of course. Allegedly for legal reasons. Dan Tehan, the chief negotiator in Australia, according to one former senior UK minister involved in the negotiations, told Liz Truss, and it's not often you find yourself feeling sorry for Liz Truss these days, but she was desperately trying to undo the damage that Boris Johnson had done, and the chief Australian negotiator told her, your boss, I won't do the accent, Dimitri, that's embarrassing for all of us, your boss has already conceded the whole kingdom.
Dan Tehan, who was former Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade and is a former trade negotiator, would have very much enjoyed sinking that knife into the hilt.
Thank you, Dmitry Gozobinski, who is an expert, as you can gather, on this and has also written a book called Why Politicians Lie About Trade, providing us there with a fairly neat illustration of why politicians lie about trade. And listen, again, I don't know if I should do this less or more, but it's all linked. It's all linked. Because the ecosystem in which Boris Johnson could give away the birthright of British beef farmers and be lauded in the right-wing media for being a genius and see people claiming that that ludicrous deal that he signed, which looks even more ludicrous today than it did then, and looks even more ludicrous today than it did when the Australian television presenters were queuing up to laugh at us, it's all linked. Because if you create an ecosystem in which liars can prosper, you end up with Donald Trump in the White House and Boris Johnson signing deals, giving away the birthright of British beef farmers. It's all linked. Because, of course, the Daily Mail has rewarded Boris Johnson with a weekly column. Speaking of weekly columns, we should have a look at what Dick by name Littlejohn has written about today. I presume he's gone in big on the war in Iran and the massive climb down by Donald Trump, the fact that he has claimed negotiations were being undertaken with Iran after claiming that they weren't, and, of course, in the face of Iran's denials. So the Daily Mail's star columnist, who, remember, has never been more ashamed to be British than when Keir Starmer elected not to join this ludicrous military adventure, and who believes in his heart of hearts, and why wouldn't he, having spent much of his career writing about British society from a gated community in Florida, he wishes passionately that Donald Trump was the leader of this country instead of Keir Starmer. So I think we'll save that treat. We'll have a little look at what he has decided to write about at this moment of incredible international importance, with the International Energy Agency warning that the current oil crisis will be worse than what we saw in the 1970s, and with Gulf states queuing up to express fears that the current crisis could end up looking like Suez 2.0 if Donald Trump doesn't start for the first time in his life demonstrating some sort of responsibility for or understanding of events. So we'll find out in the next hour what Dick by name Littlejohn in the Daily Mail has decided to write about today as one of the biggest cheerleaders in the UK for this war and indeed this president, because I'm sure it'll be very relevant, very on point and very, very interesting.
On your radio, on the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the business secretary has pushed back on calls to rethink plans to stop drilling for oil and gas in the North Sea. Prices have spiked since the start of the Iran war, and Tehran effectively closed the Strait of Hormuz, which is a key route for global supplies. Experts have warned that the public could be left vulnerable to potential price shocks without more domestic production. But speaking on LBC's Call the Cabinet this morning, Peter Kyle said more exploration licences won't guard against that.
We have done brilliantly out of it in the past, but the North Sea oil resource, you know, the end of it is in sight anyway. But also most of that oil is not enough, and the gas as well is insignificant in terms of our own domestic demand. It goes onto the international market, so it wouldn't have the direct impact or almost any impact on the pricing that we pay domestically.
The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, is preparing to outline plans this afternoon aimed at guarding against price rises sparked by the conflict. It's reported that the US Vice President, J.D. Vance, will travel to Pakistan for talks with Iranian officials later this week. The White House has said plans for discussions are fluid, adding that any speculation should not be deemed as final. Iran has denied negotiating with the US, despite President Trump calling talks strong and productive yesterday. More than 250 extra police officers are being deployed to protect the Jewish community in North London. It's in response to an arson attack in Golders Green that destroyed four ambulances belonging to a community group yesterday. Counter-terror police are leading investigations, but it's being treated as an anti-Semitic hate crime. The meningitis B vaccination programme is being expanded to include Year 11 pupils at affected schools in Kent. The total of probable and confirmed infections as of yesterday in the county stood at 20. And vets will have to cap prescription fees at £21 and publish price lists, among the new measures coming into force later this year. The competition watchdog has carried out an investigation and found that prices had been rising at almost twice the rate of inflation. Animal Welfare Minister Baroness Hayman has spoken to LBC.
we are absolutely focused on helping families save money on caring for their pets, and that we believe transparency and choice around pricing is really important. Our plan is to publish our response to the CMA report and to the consultation by the end of this year, with a view then to bringing in legislation to make these changes as soon as we possibly can.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up a point at 9,895. The pound bought $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, an unsettled day with heavy rain for the north of England, Scotland and Wales. Cloudy but dry for the south of England. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50K from April 2026, making tax digital means...
you have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has...
automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. I'll do it with Intuit QuickBooks.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 11, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we step away from matters Middle East, and we'll be keeping a very close eye on any breaking news or unfolding events. Impossible, really, to exaggerate the scale and the impact of what has been done, or the stupidity and the danger of it. But we live in a country, of course, where I don't know what percentage it was of the media. Basically, anyone who supported Brexit or Boris Johnson supported Donald Trump's war. That's the media, not the public. The public seemed to be wising up to the madness of the positions pursued by public figures in politics and media. But if you were a Boris Johnson cheerleader, or you thought Brexit was going to be brilliant, then you were, for reasons I don't fully understand, then you were of the view that Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu's war in and against Iran was not only necessary, despite the fact that they told you 9 months ago that it wasn't, but also something that Keir Starmer should join, despite the fact that that would have involved quite deliberately repeating all of the mistakes that Tony Blair made in the run-up to the Iraq War, and ignoring the Chilcot checklist that had been put together to prevent British prime ministers from making those same mistakes again. So we will step away from that, and we'll return to territory that I find simultaneously fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I feel very passionate about it. I don't know why. Well, I think I do know why, actually. More on that in a moment. But also baffling and important. We are looking at claims from the Center for Social Justice about the role that... Or the plight, I think, is the word that I would use to describe white working class boys in schools, and the fact that they routinely and repeatedly underachieve more than any other demographic. Now, this didn't used to be the case. When I was a lad, sorry, when I was new here at LBC, it was usually black working class boys. It was usually black boys from a poorer background who performed worse in class. And what right-wing presenters would say, often quite obnoxiously, was that it was all the fault of parents. And they'd talk about single mothers and absent fathers and conclude that there's nothing you can do to help these boys because it's all the fault of their feckless black parents. Whether or not that was motivated in part by racism, I do not know, but the kind of people I have in mind would have been very big fans of Boris Johnson, Brexit, and indeed Donald Trump's decision to go to war. So it's funny, isn't it, that now that white working class boys are at the bottom of the pile, the ease and the speed with which those fraudsters would reach for the argument that it's all the fault of feckless parents has diminished incredibly. Now it's probably all the fault of diversity, is it? Or positive discrimination. Why a white working class is probably woke. Why are white working class boys most likely to underperform in school? And the measure that they use, which is entirely economic, or at least entirely financial, is free school meals. For example, the white working class boys on free school meals are among the least likely to remain in education after the age of 16. Some of the distinctions here are quite thin, to be honest with you. It's not as if black working class boys are absolutely smashing it. But the fact that there's been a swap around or there's been a recalibration, to me, is very, very interesting. I don't know how important it is, but it is definitely interesting. And the reason why I say I don't know how important it is that I don't know what would happen in a classroom. If you had 10 white working class boys, 10 black working class boys, 10 white middle class boys, and 10 black middle class boys, black or Asian. Asian is a different demographic entirely when it comes to statistics like this. I don't know what happens in that classroom that produces different results. In some cases, you're going to have a sort of geographical concentration, so you're not going to have that mixture, that diversity in the same classroom. But generally speaking, you're being taught the same curriculum in the same country, in the same educational system. And if you're from a poorer background, you're more likely to be in the schools that are not the highest performing. So the certainly in terms of ethnicity, you have a relatively level playing field here, and yet white working class boys in the 20 years that I'm doing this job have fallen backwards further than anybody else. I want to do two things today. I want to know why. Three things, actually. I want to know whether whiteness has anything to do with this story, because It seems to me that the key signifier here should be working class. It should be the fact that if you're from a poorer background, you are much more likely to underperform at school. But if I'm wrong, and whiteness is a factor, I'd love to know why. I think that might be the hardest question to answer of the three questions that I'm about to ask you. Does the whiteness really matter here? And if so, why? Because it may not be pretty. I mean, you know, if it's something to do with the aspirational nature of the household or whatever else it may be, we may not want to hear what the actual explanations for this are. You're not really supposed to think about it, are you, or worry about it? You're just supposed to hand it to Nigel Farage as something to misrepresent, lie about, and use to pursue his racist agenda. But we're a little bit better than that. So if it is relevant, I want you to tell me why. And then, of course, whether it's relevant or not, the second why is about the underperformance. And this is where I have quite a lot of middle-class privilege. I've never been to a state school. My children went to one until secondary level. And then one of them went back into the state system for a bit when she was older. But the experience is not one that I have. And I don't think at the kind of school that I went to in the 1980s, I don't think there would have been, well, I hope there wouldn't have been any, well, class wouldn't have mattered because we were all in exactly the same sort of scenario at school. And it was a boarding school, so you weren't going home to a house that was markedly different from your peer group. So I think I am supremely unqualified to comment on this because of my own education. But why would the home life have such a strong bearing? Why would the commonalities of a working class family have such a strong bearing on underperformance in school? 0345 60 60 973. And then my favourite question in many ways, and one that we don't ask enough, is what can society do about this? I'm going to generalise and suggest that one part of the problem here, on a class basis, not on a colour basis, not on a skin colour basis, but one big part of the problem here will be that these kids are going home to places where education is not valued. They are going home to environments where, for example, teachers get attacked and abused and insulted. God forbid they should ever deign to take industrial action to improve their terms and conditions, because the kind of voices that the parents that we're thinking about are listening to are the kind of people that are sharpening the cudgels to attack teachers on a regular basis. They are not really having their cultural horizons expanded. I'm just thinking out loud about why you would underperform in school if you're from a certain background. And you have to wonder whether you are not being inculcated, you're not having the value of education inculcated into you. So if the home is part of the problem, but not all of the problem, if the home is part of the answer to the question here, what can society do about it? Because I don't want to sound pessimistic, but I'm about to. If you're going home to a place where you are not encouraged, where education is not valued. I had one of my favourite calls of the year so far when we touched upon similar territory a couple of months ago from a lovely woman who I've been in touch with independently of the programme, who was essentially the real-life version of Matilda. She's a doctor now, but her dad was a dustman and just didn't get it. You know, he's got this super bright daughter who's got all sorts of plates spinning and ambitions developing, and there was nothing him and her mum could do to help because she was off on a course that they knew nothing about. She got very lucky. She got lucky via teachers, and she got lucky by the family of her best friend. But that's not society stepping in to help. You don't guarantee luck for anybody in life. So you've got this question of whether or not society can actually do anything to help people whose parents don't help them. And I'm not sure it can. That's the pessimistic bit. 0345 60 60 973. Has it really got anything to do with being white? Are white kids really more likely to be living in homes where education is undervalued? I suppose, I don't know, if their dad's out all night hanging up tatty flags on local lampposts instead of making sure they've done their homework, you could have a bit of a problem unfolding. But that's a fairly lazy generalisation on my part. Do you think that being white makes you less likely? If you're white working class, you're less likely to care about education, your children's education, than if you're from a different ethnicity? Or has the system re-corrected to a point where extra effort is put into looking after black kids from poor backgrounds and some white kids have been squeezed out? I'd need evidence for that, I'm afraid, not just racist memes off your Uncle Keith's Facebook page. And then the final question becomes, and this is me really dripping with middle class privilege when I posit the possibility that if mum and dad or mum or dad are just not interested, then how the hell do you help that kid? Because I don't think, and this is why I use the word passion at the top of this introduction, I don't think I feel more passionate about anything really when it comes to our society than equalizing opportunity. And I'll tell you why. So I said 10 minutes ago when I said I do know why I care about this. Some of my best mates, right, who are, I mean, proper bright, really clever lads. I'm thinking of two or three people in particular who went to, sorry mate, not you, who went to schools. Of course I'm thinking of, but you know, you don't fit into this category. Stop distracting me with your puppy dog eyes, Keith. So I'm thinking of two or three lads that I'm very, very fond of, and who went to schools that are the polar opposite of the kind of school that I went to, right? The polar opposite. Kind of school where you'd get teased for reading a book. Not just for, like, doing a poem or quoting, but for just reading a book. And they're not all white working class. There's two white working class, one mixed race, if you're interested. And I know for a fact, and I've told them this, I'm not betraying any confidences, I know for a fact that if those lads had gone to my school, then today they were, and I'm proud of them, and they do great things, and they've got great lives and lovely families and all of that. And they might not have wanted to do the things that they would have done if they'd gone to a school like mine, but if they'd gone to a school like mine, they would be doing completely different things. They'd have just thought that, oh, well, I could be a doctor, or I could be a stockbroker, or, and I'm not saying that's better or worse. I'm just saying that it never crossed their minds that there could be, and I know, because I'm quite good at assessing other people's basic intelligence before the education gets in place, the basic intelligence of these people, no one ever made them think that they could be doing the kind of things that every single boy who went to my school was told from the age of 7 that they should be thinking about doing. So how does society reach those people? In this case, the white working class boys, if white matters, which is another part of the phone-in. How does society help those boys if nobody else is, up to and including mum and or dad? Because I don't know. I mean, we can sit here until we're blue in the face, can't we? Pointing out that it's wrong and it's unfair and it's this and it's that and the other. But if you really want to improve the education and therefore the life chances, the aspirations, the horizons of... shall I level with you why I care about this so much? It's not altruism or some angelic nature. It's because I'm adopted. And if I hadn't been adopted, I'd have been raised by a single mother in rural Ireland. And I would not have gone to private school, and I'm not even sure I'd have gone to school at all because of the kind of kid I was when I wasn't heavily disciplined. And so I think about what would have happened to me if I hadn't had the education and the family home that I had. That's why I care about it so much. It's got nothing to do with politics or socialism. It's all about what would have happened to me. Who could have helped me if I was naughty and lazy? None of these words are helpful, I know, but they're the words that were always written on my school reports. What would have happened to me if I hadn't been in an environment where education mattered and people expected things from me? How could society have stepped in to help when home life was not doing the job? It's 11:18.
This is LBC.
This Easter, switch your phone from home mode to unlimited data in Tokyo mode, so you can find mind-blowing ramen. And not something that tastes like you just ate it at your desk.
Ooh.
Get all the data you need abroad with no dodgy Wi-Fi, no roaming charges, and no nasty bills with an unlimited eSIM from Aerolo. Visit Aerolo.com to switch on holiday mode next time you travel. Check your device compatibility.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, stop working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quaterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears, and 4 giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood, and Cafes!
Nutcatch Adventure Park!
The fun goes on and on and on and on!
Book now at nutcatch.com!
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 20 minutes after 11, and it is in many ways my favourite question. What can society do to boost, to big up, to propel, to improve the lot and the expectations of the sections of society that are most likely to underperform in school? And there's a subtext to this, which you're welcome to disabuse me of, you're welcome to object to, but for me the subtext is that society needs to do something with these boys, because we're talking in the first instance about white working class boys, that mum and or dad or carers or home life is not currently or satisfactorily doing. See, I think Jamie might be joking here when he texts me to say, do you mean I could be Prime Minister like Cameron and Bojo the Clown? But this is a wonderful illustration of what I'm trying to describe to you. Go to a school like theirs, and even if you are, look, a mediocre intellect like David Cameron, absolutely nobody ever says to you when you say, I want to be Prime Minister, don't be ridiculous. Get back in your box. You're going to be a high street accountant like your dad. It just doesn't happen. David Cameron says, I want to be Prime Minister one day. And everybody goes, yeah, that's perfectly reasonable. You know, we've already had 30 from this school alone. And that's part of it. And I don't know what society can do to fill that hole if it isn't a hole that has been already filled in by your privilege and your parents' money. 21 after 11 is the time. Alison's in Falkirk. Alison, what would you like to say?
Yeah, I'm coming at this from the perspective of a retired speech-language therapist, and we've been heavily involved with the Scottish Attainment Challenge.
Okay.
So really, the problems start really young. And what you have is generations of families where they've started school disadvantaged. So there's a huge vocabulary gap between children who come from more affluent families and children who come from the poorer communities.
How early does it manifest?
You're talking one and two, and certainly preschool.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the things that make a huge difference, and we've known since the 1960s that this makes a difference, is things like Sure Start centres.
Yeah, well, they were back to David Cameron, he got rid of them.
Yeah, but I'm also thinking about the interview that you did with Angela Rayner.
Oh, yes.
Who's a really good example of somebody who's broken through that barrier.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. And she says the thing that made the biggest difference to her was in part her work colleagues and her intelligence, but also the Sure Start Centre that helped her to understand how to parent her son when she hadn't been parented that way herself.
And she was a child herself at the time. She was a teenage mum, wasn't she?
That's right.
So just guidance, obvious. And there's a problem here, and this is where it's more about class than colour, is that... I don't think that a perfectly decent middle-class parent could contemplate the levels of, and I don't know what word to use, I don't want to say ignorance. I've heard it occasionally on the radio when people are presented with facts about poverty and they can't actually bring themselves to believe it. They just can't quite, but who needs lessons on how to look after a baby? Who needs it? But there's a gap, isn't there? A cultural gap now in our society that does need filling by society, because if society doesn't fill it, no one else will. And you're right, Angela and the Sure Start Centre is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. I'm thinking also of my nephew who went to a private education setting in Scotland and has qualified as a doctor, and he's absolutely lovely. He's lovely. He's working in London in an ENT specialist. But he once said to me that he had never, before he qualified, met somebody who couldn't communicate adequately. And that's not people with learning disabilities or English as an additional language.
Yeah.
It was ordinary people who walked in and they couldn't understand what he was saying to them.
Gosh.
And to address that, you have to start young. Because if you go into school with a vocabulary gap and you're being asked to read books about Biff and Chip and all these things, not only do you not recognise the experiences because you probably don't know what a letterbox is.
Yeah.
But also...
Well, neither of us know if Biff and Chip are still at the heart of the curriculum, do we?
I'm not sure that they are.
No, I doubt it, to be honest. But I take your central point. And another point we've overlooked, and this is on me, not you, is that a lot of parents are just knackered. I mean, the harder you work, if you're doing shift work or you're doing zero-hour contracts or you're doing two or three jobs because the wages are so low, then it's not a question of choosing not to broaden your child's horizon. It's a question of just being too shattered to do so.
But also, you didn't get that when you were little, and probably neither did your grandparents. We're talking back to the 1980s now of intergenerational disadvantage.
Mm.
And then you add in things like drugs and alcohol. And it wouldn't be surprising if many of the children had fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, but so do their parents.
What? So, Sure Start's on the list. What else would you put on the list? Verbal. I mean, no, because you can only do that at places like Sure Start. So, I mean, looking at why this graph is moving in the direction that it's moving, it's another thing that leads to George Osborne and David Cameron, perhaps. By closing Sure Start centres, they closed horizons for this generation of young white boys.
Absolutely. And the other thing I think is that we as a society need to recognise that this is, we keep throwing short-term projects at it.
Yeah.
And we've done research on that as well, so that we had a super project. It worked brilliantly. The children all did well in the classes, in primary one, in primary two, and their language skills really improved, which gave them better access to the curriculum. And then the funding ran out, and the effects washed out by primary seven.
And that's not, again, if the road doesn't lead to George Osborne, it leads to short-termism and the idea that the government can come in with the best of intentions, and then the next government will come in and undo it all. So if you think things are bad now, just imagine what would happen with a different government. Which reminds me, Henry Reilly will be with us at 12:45 with Reilly's 11:45 with Reilly's Reform Roundup, his now daily attempt to keep us all up to date with just what an absolute shower of shoddiness Nigel Farage's latest outfit has miraculously and unexpectedly turned out to be. Alison, thank you. I mean, a couple of things. First of all, I just want to make this clear, because I might be seeking asylum in Ireland one day. So when I said that if I'd grown up in Ireland, I might not have gone to school at all, it wasn't a reflection on Ireland. It was a reflection on growing up with a mother who was barely a decade and a half older than me, and knowing how much trouble I got into with an incredibly privileged education and incredibly committed parents. So just the idea that I could have gone feral had nothing to do with the country I was in, Tom. I appreciate there's more than enough stereotypes about Irish and the Irish, we Irish, and Ireland going around the place without me contributing to it. But the other one, because, you know, I sometimes marvel at the fact that people are listening to the same program that we're listening to. So Spencer has been listening to the same program that you've been listening to, and he's got in touch to say, James the posh snob attacking white working class again. He should be careful what he says, as there are consequences coming his way, says Spencer, who is almost certainly listening to this program while wearing a tatty dressing gown in his mum's back bedroom. So not necessarily quite as frightening in person as he pretends to be on social media. But that aside, mate, I'm literally conducting a phone-in about how people with poor education or people with poor prospects can have their lives improved. And obviously, I can't now be rude to you, because you're clearly one of the people that I'm talking about. And it's my fault that I hadn't been clear enough in my explanation to help you understand that, instead of somehow creating the idea in your mind that I was being a posh snob and attacking the white working class while talking about how important it is to me that the prospects and the life chances of boys in that category, because if I hadn't been adopted, I would have been one, are improved. And, of course, the question remains, what on earth can society do about it? It's coming up to 11:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And Biff, Chip and Kip are still going strong, according to many of you, actually, with children currently in primary school. And I just want to double stress, if that's even a word, the fact that it is not like a feckless choice. This is what I hated when it was black boys who were doing worse at school, and right-wing blowhards would come on the radio and claim it was all about parents and all about single mothers and all about absent fathers. And more often than not, I found myself thinking, I bet they're just working really, really hard and they're really tired, and they get home at the end of the day and they've got less time to dedicate to their children's cultural enrichment than the rest of us would have. And that's obviously still true, and it's going to be a big part of what we're talking about here. But it doesn't change the question of, if mum and dad aren't doing it because they won't or can't, then who does? And what does it look like? It's 11:30. Dominic Ellis is here now with your headlines.
The business secretary has pushed back on increasing calls to back drilling in the North Sea to reinforce the UK's energy security. Global oil and gas prices have spiked since the start of the Iran war 3 weeks ago. A meningitis B vaccination programme is being expanded to include Year 11 pupils at affected schools in Kent. The total of probable and confirmed infections in the county stands at 20. And vets will have to cap some fees and be more transparent about costs as part of measures coming into force later this year. The competition watchdog carried out an investigation and found that prices had been rising at almost twice the rate of inflation. LBC weather, an unsettled day with heavy rain for northern England, Scotland and Wales. Cloudy but dry for the south of England. A high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. If you are a landlord and you have existing tenants, you must send them a copy of the government's information sheet by the 31st of May, or risk a fine. Find out more at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They've got bags of offers and promotions kicking about.
Like what?
For a start, all them weekly promotions.
Oh, yeah?
There's the Loyalty Club, the BetVictor Predictor. And in Casino, they've got the Spinners Club, which is a weekly slot thingamajig. And you can also order food to your door.
Can you?
Oh, no, hang about. That's a different app.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
From the big transformations to the small home improvements, you can feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself. Hi, Clampy, how's it going? Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely. Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345-6060-973.
It is 11:33. It's a different story in the hands of most media than it was 20 years ago, because 20 years ago the headline would have been black working class boys being left behind, and people who do what I do for a living would have been queuing up to say, well, that's because they're black, or it's because their parents are black, or it's because their fathers are all absent. But now it's white working class boys who are being left behind, so, and we should be grateful for this, the ease with which people will reach for very lazy and ignorant answers has been diminished accordingly. For me, I suspect the further you dig into the numbers, the less relevant colour will become. But that's a hangover of the days that I just described to you, because it's really about class and the relationship between demographics and education, employment and health outcomes. So you are less likely to stay at school beyond 16, and you are less likely to secure, obviously, the higher education opportunities, but also the employment opportunities and the health outcomes that you deserve if you are coming from a poorer community. And, I mean, some of the question this hour is about why that would be, because it's not immediately obvious to everybody, and in fact it's probably less immediately obvious to people from more privileged backgrounds than it is to everybody else, despite the fact that people from more privileged backgrounds are generally in charge in this country. And then, of course, the question of what can society do to fill the gap in these children's lives? And that's the one that I think is hardest to answer, personally. Joe's in Whiteley in Hampshire. Joe, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I'd like to contribute. So I am a teacher, and I have worked with so many children who do fall behind. And in my own experience, class has nothing to do with it. Sorry, not class, colour has nothing to do with it. Absolutely nothing to do with it. But rather, children's home life, their upbringing, the support that they get. And yes, there is a correlation between how affordable things are for their family, whether or not they get to spend time with their parents, but actually also from a mental health point of view. So many of the children that I've worked with, a lot of the time when they underachieve, it's because they do that cliche lashing out at school, misbehaving at school, and actually for them it's just that 9 times out of 10 they feel safest at school to be able to say, do you know what, if you try and talk to me, I'll let you know that something's not quite right at home. And when something's not quite right at home, if they then can't go to school and tell people and ask people for help, then they're not going to go to school.
I don't know that we can derive that to the generalisation that the headline contains, can we? I mean, we're not suggesting that white working class boys or working class boys are much more likely to have troubled home lives than, for example, working class girls, because that just doesn't seem logical. Mm-hmm. Or that what you're describing is going to be the big enough factor to explain an entire demographic conclusion.
Well, with regards to, you know, why is it boys and not girls?
Yeah.
Girls are, me myself, you know, if I didn't have somewhere to go, so when I grew up, I had youth centres, I had, you know, community centres that we could go to and hang out. And when you're around friends, you do get that hit of endorphins, and you do get the, you know, the encouragement that, you know, you're doing good. And that, in turn, replaced what I wasn't getting at home. But with boys, over the years, that has all disappeared. And girls are much more... I mean, I know certainly I would mask it a lot. So if I couldn't go to youth centres, you know, that week, and mum and dad were arguing, I masked it. You know, I found different ways to channel, you know, whatever was going on in my head. And actually, for me, school was a safe space. And so I did attend school. Actually, for me, you know, my attendance was always 100%. But with everyone, actually, if you don't have an outlet to go to where you can get that positivity, you can be around friends, you can be around safety, and then you go to school, you do lash out because you want that attention. And then actually, teachers have been so strapped, we can't give them that attention.
You might lash out, other people might opt out, other children might opt out. And of course, if the parent isn't going to join the teacher in the attempt to undo this, then the child is doubly doomed. Do we have any idea whether the boy-girl dichotomy applies in other countries and other cultures? Because it sounds logical to me, but I'm, you know, I'm a geographical relativist. I'm very much a product of my own upbringing in this country. So if I'd been brought up somewhere else, would it be less obvious that girls will provide each other with a support structure that values education than boys will because they're too busy fighting and playing football or cricket?
Yes, I understand the question. And
good.
I can only share from my own opinion and my own experience, and it is because my parents are immigrants themselves.
Okay.
I'd like to add at this point, they're not the fresh off the boat. did come, you know, the usual channels. But I very much was brought up under a Western society, Western, you know, cultural influences, friendships. But then at home, very much a Asian culture.
Right.
And I do, and having, you know, travelled, fortunate enough to travel as an adult, I realised that so much of it is cultural rather than just class. It isn't just about the money. It is about, I had parents who, regardless if I had been a boy or a girl, they would have spent heaven and, you know, they would have gone heaven and earth, even if they were working multiple jobs, which they did, my parents, they nonetheless came home and made sure that even if they were falling asleep with one eye was open to help me with the work, to read a letter. And, I mean, in my own situation, I had to translate said letter you know, get them to act on it.
You could change it, couldn't you, while you were reading it out to your parents? You could be like, Joe is just the best student in the history of the world. We can't believe how lucky we are to have her. And
you know,
mum and dad would be none the wiser.
I am 37 years old, and my whole life I've never actually thought that.
But well, that's why I started to see
so
how much trouble I would have got into as a kid if I wasn't... well, I don't want to say discipline, because some of the discipline I received was probably is probably illegal now. But that culture, you can't avoid some of the questions that are linked to culture. And culture might be very closely allied with ethnicity in some of the experiences you've described, the immigrant experience, the Asian immigrant experience, the expectations of children to do much better than mum and dad did because they've traipsed halfway around the world in pursuit of opportunity.
Yes.
So if you don't take that opportunity, then, you know, you've got questions to answer.
And I was speaking to your producer before, and the question came up about, you know, what is it culturally? I do think that as a society and culturally over the last 20 years, the reason why the black boys were the ones that were identified as being underperforming, what the difference was is that the rhetoric from the media, if anything, it fueled those families to realise, okay, then what do I need to do to help my child? What do I need to do in the, you know, the last 20 years to make that change?
Turn this around. Well, blacks aren't helpful as well now that you've mentioned it, because, of course, the experience of people from African families compared to West Indian families was very different as well. They also addressed the institutional racism that ran through schools like Blackpool through a stick of rock, which would have played a big part in it as well.
Yes. But there's so much to be... There's so much... non-credit given to the saying, it takes a village to raise a child.
Everybody pulling together.
It very much does. And I have seen with the families that I work with, so although I was classroom based, I went private tutoring. And in my time private tutoring, I realized there is a discourse between the working class families and the more wealthier families, in that from a financial point of view and from a privileged point of view, it wasn't necessarily that the parents were then stepping up and doing the homework. They just got the au pairs to do it.
Someone was there.
They just got the nannies to do it.
Yeah, crikey.
Yes.
Well, that's like boarding school as well, actually. So that's why my experience is so useless in the context of these conversations, because you were constantly being monitored and policed, and of course I have to say helped in the ways that you describe, but on a residential basis rather than just having someone in your house that did it. Joe, that's great. Thank you. That's really helpful. This is lovely from Emma. I remember marvelling that Biff, Chip and Kipper had their own bedrooms, and they were so big enough even for a doll's house. That's what I meant by my privilege, my middle-class privilege. I cannot imagine looking at the books that my kids had when they were at primary school and thinking what Emma thought when they read the same books a few years previously. Wow, look at the size of that bedroom. And you get one all to yourself, and it's got room for a doll's house. I don't know how important that is to the conversation that we're having, but it stopped me in my tracks. Thank you, Joe. Remy's in Croydon. Remy, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, Remy.
Just a couple of things struck me.
Go on.
Mixed race. I'm 50. Significance of that is my dad's Nigerian.
Right.
And my mum's white English. And I was just saying to your researcher that a couple of things have struck me, because I've got a son of my own now who's 13. I sent him to private school.
Yeah.
And I would say that 75%, maybe 80% of the children at his school are either Black African heritage or Asian heritage.
Okay.
And I think that's really significant.
So you what you're talking about is a prioritisation of education,
yeah,
in terms
massively.
Of your finances, essentially.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and before that, I come from a very working class background, in the sense that my mum came from a very working class background, and I was first to go to university in the family from, you know, actually, yeah. Sorry, my brother was, and then it was me from a female perspective. And what I see the difference between my mum and dad is the kind of deferred gratification as well. My mum had to go to work at 15. She could have gone, she was bright enough by all means to go to university, but it never crossed her mind that that was ever a possibility or something that she would go for. Whereas my dad always had the mentality that, you know, he would either be a doctor, accountant, lawyer, one of those things. And I also think that's driven to some degree from colonialism, because when you come from these colonies, there is an emphasis on, if you want to do better, if you want to better yourself, the main route is through education. So you'll do, that's something that's drilled into you from where go, because when I think of my background, there was never any question that I wasn't going to go to university. There was never any other route.
But I mean, there was. That you could, and your brother could. So something else happened here, because there will be people who recognise elements of your upbringing, who fell off the treadmill, as it were, who fell off the...
And what's really interesting is that when I think about my upbringing, is in the sense that my brother, who is about 7 years older than me, he took the lawyer route. He went to a proper 1970s comprehensive. He was called to the bar, all the things that at that time were very, very unusual. It just kind of didn't happen to people like us. And I went to a Russell Group university, all these things, but I didn't question at any point going there. But I saw lots of my contemporaries at school, that didn't happen for them. But now what I see is people my age, sending their children and my ethnicity, doing everything they can to send their children to the best possible school they can send them to. Not everybody has those resources.
No, of course not. I mean, in any section of society, but even if you can't afford it, it means that you are recognising the importance of education, and that will manifest itself in different ways, even when you're still in the state system.
Absolutely, and I think people really focus on academics, but it's not that. It's also it impacts on the way you see the world. Not always for the best,
no.
But it gives you aspirations. You see things differently.
It's a toolkit. It contains much more than exam results.
It does, and I don't think people realise that. When I went to university, I immediately saw the difference between myself and people my age who'd been to public school. There was a massive difference.
Of course.
But there's also these kind of the things you learn that are not talked about, things you understand that are not talked about. You know, I kind of now I look back and think, you know, the jobs, people are saying, oh, there's not so many jobs for graduates, blah, yeah. blah, blah. But the same people are getting the same jobs. It's the same milk round.
I agree with that, albeit that some of the people in that catchment area, that is shrinking. So the people who expected to be getting those kind of jobs aren't, but the people who are still exactly from the background or the demographic that you described. Thank you, Remy. I'm moving on just because I happened to glance at the clock for once. But before I do, this from Alex. James, you've been talking about white working class boys. Why have all your callers been women? Could the absence of male voices willing to speak about this be part of the problem? Just let me have a look at the screen. I mean, there are men there. Hopefully we'll have time to talk to them, but not until we've heard from Henry Riley with the latest edition of Riley's Reform Roundup!
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It is, as you just heard, call the Cabinet's pleasure to welcome to the studio Secretary of State for Business and Trade, Peter Carr. Lorraine's in Luton. Your question to Peter Carr. Lorraine, go ahead. Good morning.
What I'd like to say is, in regards to the North Sea, why are we not encouraging more exploration?
The North Sea oil resource, the end of it is in sight anyway.
Chris O'Shea, who's the chief executive of Centrica British Gas, says the government needs to drop its ban on exploiting untapped oil. There's a company called Ithaca that says there's 500 million barrels of oil that could come from the Jackdaw field.
What we have to do is look to where the long-term sustainable energy generation...
The reality is Ed Miliband, for whatever reason, seems to be running the Cabinet and not the Prime Minister.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Irrational is a printer that's next to your laptop, but somehow offline. Smart is a printer with self-healing Wi-Fi that helps keep you connected. Stressful is your printer choosing check-in day to check out of ink. Smart is an HP Smart Tank with 3 years of cartridge-free ink. Oh, that's smart. So go on, search HP Smart Tank. Find the last printer you'll ever need.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 11:51. Henry Riley is here with Riley's Reform Roundup.
Two jingles this time. God, yeah,
you're bigging up your role, aren't you, eh? Honestly, it's going to be taking out the whole show soon. Go on, Nick.
This one's from Larry.
Yeah.
Different
country
western
vibe. Yeah. Rawhide. He's just taking a song that most of us know from Blues Brothers and stuck a bit of you in it.
There's one more, which is Steve.
Well done, Larry. It's Henry's Reform. That's very, that's strong because it's got, I mean, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's got the title in it, and it actually cues you up.
Does it, wrong title because it's Henry's reform round, that they say, rather than Riley's. But
oh, what a coincidence!
Sorry, Steve. Yeah,
yeah, funny that. Eh? Okay.
Quite a few stories around today, James. Let's start. Nigel Farage had to abandon a walkabout in Felixstowe after a protest. He was on the seafront as part of the local election launch in Suffolk for his party. But after protesters went to the scene holding banners and chanting, a party spokesperson said the event was cancelled following security advice. Nigel Farage saying he's the reason the elections there are going ahead because it was his court challenge. That there were previously postponed elections that will now go ahead. Sarah Fitch was one of the protesters, said that the party did not back up its policy with regards to Reform UK. This is some of the protests that put Mr. Farage off.
Hey, how are you? All right.
Roll up, ladies and gentlemen, for the fascist freak show. Woo! Roll up, roll up. To the House of Smoke and Mirrors! Roll up, ladies and gentlemen!
Just go to the people that don't want
to. And of course, Reform dispute everything that is said in that protest. And
did anyone attack the police?
In that, no.
Were any buildings set fire to?
No.
Did anybody call for refugees or indeed members of Nigel Farage's outfit to be burned alive in their beds?
No.
Okay, so none of them will be invited to appear on stage at the Net Reform UK party conference then, because those are the kind of things... Oh, and of course, Farage we had on tape, didn't we, earlier this week, or late last week, praising someone who'd been jailed for his involvement in the riots last summer.
This was a cameo video, yes.
Yes. Okay, just a little reminder there of where Nigel Farage stands on public protests, normally.
Another story, the Reform mayoral candidate in Hampshire has likened... This is, of course, after that appalling incident we saw yesterday in Golders Green. Has likened a Jewish community group to Islamists on horseback. This is Chris Parry, who's the mayor.
I know that name.
He's the mayoral candidate for Hampshire. Yeah, he is. I mean, previously said that David Lammy should go home and that his loyalties lied with the Caribbean.
Good grief.
He has described members of a... This is Mr. Parry, by the way, not Mr. Lammy. Has described members of a Jewish neighbourhood watch group as cosplayers and likened them to Islamists on horseback in comments made after the attack on Jewish charity ambulances. He made the remarks about Shomrim, which is a group of safeguarding volunteers.
They work with Hatzolah, don't they?
They do, yes. That's the link there. They work with Hatzolah. He had initially shared a post on X with the line saying, can Christians in Britain set up their own police force and patrol certain neighbourhoods? He didn't write that, he shared it, but then later on he added saying, remember that these cosplayers have no more jurisdiction or legal authority than ordinary citizens. When he was challenged over that, he said there are a community organisation, not a legal entity. It's the same with Islamists on horseback, but if it offends you, I'll remove it. The president of Shomrim described his remarks as ignorant. When he was challenged about his comments by The Guardian, Mr. Parry said that he was keen to highlight that people were confusing various community action groups with the real police. We've been speaking, our reporter Benji Heyer, with the Liberal Democrat MP Max Wilkinson. This was Mr. Wilkinson's reaction.
These comments are so ill-judged and so insensitive, particularly because of the recent attack on the Hatzolah ambulances in North London, and also because there is an increasing trend of anti-Semitic hate crimes and anti-Semitic incidents in this country. Now, we all need to stand up against anti-Semitism, and Nigel Farage now has an opportunity to prove that he will do that by ensuring that this man is not the Reform candidate for mayor for Hampshire this May. And failure to get rid of him will show that he's just not treating this problem with enough seriousness.
Lib Dem Max Wilkinson.
Yeah, don't hold your breath. Well, I suppose we haven't got time to dwell too long on that one, but we shall watch that development with interest. What else have you got?
We've got a crypto story that we didn't get around to yesterday. This is a story that's been bubbling away for some time. Reform UK have been converting crypto donations into cash before they reach the party's coffers. This is because Nigel Farage did admit that his party had received a couple of crypto donations. There's nothing wrong with that. It's perfectly lawful. However, the party has not registered those donations donations made in digital currency, which means they haven't been registered as crypto donations. They've gone through in other ways. The Labour Party have called for the Electoral Commission to investigate. Sources have told the Observer newspaper this is because Reform's crypto donations come into a wallet controlled by a permissible donor. The issue there, though, is they're then turned into regular currency, by the way. The issue is, though, they're hard to track because these wallets do not have to be registered in the UK, for example.
So they could be taking money anonymously from people.
That's the allegation, because the Electoral Commission have responded saying that when it's a crypto wallet in the UK, they can track it. However, they are, quotes, limited in the information we can obtain from crypto providers that are based overseas. The Labour MP, Liam Byrne, who chairs the business committee, is calling for opaque crypto transactions and third-party cash ways like this to be banned. A spokesperson for Reform has said all donations are converted into cash by a regulated third party that does it for us. Reform has no wallet. The party meets all legal responsibilities, and they do, but nonetheless, it's an issue that Labour are keen to draw attention to.
On we go. Don't forget, what time is it? 11:57. Time for one or two more, but don't forget, we need to do our daily feature now, which is disgusting things Nigel Farage says for coins.
Got it. Well, let's do one more before we get to your other feature. Matt Goodwin, who was the party's candidate, came second, as you'll recall.
Hasn't he changed his name?
Gorton and Denton. Has he?
Well, I think private eye called him Matt Goodwinge.
Goodwinge.
Bad loss, actually, after his adventures in Gorton and Denton, but on we go.
Got it. He has written this book, Suicide of a Nation, Immigration, Islam and Identity. It's been described as a story of how Britain, one of the most remarkable countries on earth, is not just in decline, but is committing national suicide.
Sounds terrifying.
And he says it's a story of how people are losing their own country. Yes. After his publication, critics have taken to X to point out that ChatGPT is mentioned in the URL in some of Mr. Goodwin's references in the book. Andy Twelves, a journalist, went through the book and uncovered various false quotes, misinterpreted data, and a heavy reliance on ChatGPT. It's been covered by the journalist Mick Wright as well.
He tweets as Broken Bottle Boy, or is on Blue Sky as Broken Bottle Boy. Does some great stuff. He's written a good book as well.
He called it a badly written, self-satisfied and smug book filled with falsehoods and inventions.
Someone said that about mine.
There are 12 references in the book. Five are to Mr. Goodwin's own Substack.
Oh, that's bold. Carry on.
Three were sourced via ChatGPT, and there's one Telegraph article which quotes Matt Goodwin. He has said, I do link several of my Substack articles because, as it happens, with the exception of David Coleman, I'm one of the only people who's run Democratic projections at this level. He has also said, with response to AI, quotes, in response to my critics, the post was headlined on X, he said, I can see no issue obtaining data sets via AI so long as they are cross-checked to the original source. And in response, he said, number six on Amazon, the left don't want you to read it. That's why they're attacking it. If you want to know what's going to happen in Britain, unless we change course, you should read it.
Well done. What about the quotes from Cicero, Hayek and James Burnham?
Yes, a lot of those... it does seem were sort of AI hallucinations where they were...
So there's no evidence that the things they're quoted as saying in this book they actually said?
No.
Okay, that's awkward. Who's the publisher?
I think it's self-published. I need to have a look.
Okay.
It's
not... and finally, things Nigel Farage says... Disgusting things Nigel Farage says for money, part five, is it?
Part four, actually.
Sorry. We've got loads more to come, haven't we?
Nigel Farage called for the release of Sean Diddy Combs.
Pardon?
Combs. This is a P. Diddy, of course. And this is the video that was posted on Cameo.
I've got to roast Newcastle and say free Diddy, eat Shankly, and if in doubt, let's control our borders.
That was a message for Kieron, requested Mr. Farage say, free Diddy, eat Shankly. The user also asked the Reform leader to say, as you heard there, if in doubt, kick it out. This is, of course, also known as Puff Daddy. He was, he's got a 4-year jail sentence, and he was found guilty of prostitution-related convictions back in July. Important to say, this video did come out, so obviously with regards to Sean Diddy Combs. He said... I'm just trying to get the timing right here. That's it. So this was, he was not in jail at this point, but when Nigel Farage recorded the video, which was after his election as an MP, the rapper was being detained without bail at Brooklyn Metropolitan Detention Centre awaiting trial.
And what was he done for in the end? Sorry?
Prostitution-related convictions with a 4-year jail sentence.
Okay. Well, I never. Whew.
And the price?
Oh, how much did he charge for that?
It was £82.
£82. Well, nothing if not cheap. 12:01 is the time.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a cabinet minister has pushed back on calls to reverse a ban on drilling for oil and gas in the North Sea. Prices have surged since the start of the Iran war, with experts concerned that costs will be absorbed by UK households. Conservatives could try to force a vote in the Commons demanding new drilling licences to try and help tackle soaring costs. But speaking to LBC's Call the Cabinet this morning, the Business Secretary Peter Kyle insisted that's not the best way forward.
We've got to look at what resources we have domestically into the very long term. As I said before, even if we extract, because we're worried about the short-term impact that we have from the conflict that's in the Middle East at the moment with Iran, what we have to do is look to where the long-term sustainable energy generation is going to come from.
The Chancellor is preparing to set out plans to protect the UK economy against the rising cost of oil and gas. Rachel Reeves is due to make a statement to the Commons this lunchtime, promising to crack down on unfair price rises. Qatar says that the Iran war must end through diplomatic means and that Tehran's total annihilation is not an option. The Qatari Foreign Ministry also says it's not involved in any mediation efforts with the US and Iran to try and end the conflict. A meningitis B vaccination programme is being expanded to include Year 11 pupils at affected schools in Kent. The total of probable and confirmed infections in the county now stands at 20. Vets will be forced to limit their prescription fees and become more transparent about their prices from later this year. The Competition and Markets Authority has announced new measures to regulate the industry. A report has previously found that owners aren't being given enough information about prices. The Animal Welfare Minister, Baroness Hayman, has told LBC the government is keen to improve transparency.
Without transparency, you can't have choice, because you need to know what different practices are charging and actually also what the internet is charging in order to make choices about how much you are going to be paying for your pet care.
And new homes in England are to include solar panels and heat pumps as part of new planning requirements. Solar panels, which plug into the mains, are also going to be made available to buy from supermarkets as part of government efforts to speed up the transition to renewable energy. Critics say ministers should instead bring down energy costs by getting rid of green levies. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 22 at £9,916. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, an unsettled afternoon with heavy rain for northern England, Scotland and Wales. Cloudy but dry for the south of England. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 5 minutes after 12. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I think I'm going to continue, actually. With the conversation about white working class boys, or working class boys in particular, not least because Alex pointed out just before the break there that every contributor had been a woman so far, which is great. You know, it's supposed to be the hardest demographic to reach when you do a radio phone-in programme, although as with most tropes regarding radio phone-in programmes, it doesn't really apply to this one, but it was pertinent, wasn't it? And I just noticed when I looked at my board that there were quite a few blokes queuing up to contribute. So if you're just joining us, the question remains... very live. It's changed in the course of my career on the radio. When I began here, black working class boys would routinely underperform at school, and now white working class boys have moved into the pole position in that very unenviable race, and we are trying to work out why. But the question that interests me most is what can be done about it. So Charlie Dewhurst, who is the MP for Bridlington and the Wolds, has called this weekend for more to be done. And I just wonder what that would look like, not least because, if it's not happening at home because mum and or dad are just shattered after putting in a shift, the likes of which most middle-class types are never going to, the physical exhaustion sometimes of manual labour or of service sector work, very different sort of tiredness from the kind of thing. Well, I think I did say on the radio, Keith will know this because he loves it when I get into trouble. Did I say on the radio once that my job was much harder than being a builder? And I said it as a joke, but it got clipped up and it was, yeah, I thought so. So having been a builder and also a radio presenter, I can comfortably say that the level of knackered that you are after doing a shift on a building site is nothing like the level of tired that you are after doing a shift in a newspaper office or indeed in a radio studio. So if it's about, you know, reading to the children or doing their homework with them, I'm not saying it's impossible or that nobody does it, but if it was me, I'd find it a lot harder after putting in a hard day's graft of manual labour than I would do after putting in a hardish day's graft in an office or on the radio. So that might be part of it. I categorically do not want you to come away from this conversation thinking that the reason why white working class boys are not doing well at school is because their parents don't care. Now, that might be part of it. I think it probably is. I think if your dad is out all night putting tatty flags up on all the local lampposts, then he's probably not prioritising education, culture, or indeed your own welfare as a child. He's got other fish to fry that he considers to be more important. But that is a vanishingly tiny minority. I worry about politics. I worry that if your dad is reading certain newspapers, which is, of course, increasingly less likely, or following certain people or listening to certain influencers or broadcasters, then he may deride teachers, he may denigrate teachers, he may think that schools are a waste of time. If he had a bad time at school himself, he's probably not imbuing you with the sense that you need to pay attention. But again, I don't know how many people you would need in that category for it to become a major influencer of the statistics that we're looking at. It's about why this is happening and what can be done about it, because that's the bit I don't quite get. This is what the MP for Bridlington told BBC Politics North at the weekend. I wanted to highlight the fact that too often in recent years, government have taken targeted measures. They've identified groups they think need help, and we're not thinking about the wider majority. But I don't know what help looks like, and that's where you can help me. Graham is on. If you were listening to Mystery Hour on Thursday, you'd appreciate that. On, not in, the Wirral. Graham, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello.
I was a secondary school governor for 20 years.
Okay.
And it was a white area, very few, black or Asian pupils. It's a mixed area. There's some areas which are quite well to do, others which were not.
Okay.
And unfortunately, our school, the catchment area, tended to be in the more deprived areas.
We
had a lot of kids come into secondary school, year seven, who were not able to read and write to anything like the standard to be able to access the curriculum. I agree with the previous callers. Sure Start is where you need to start to put that back into place.
Good Lord.
But also, if you think about it, the jobs that those types of kids would traditionally do with few educational skills coming out of school were the manual labour jobs. For example, construction. But of course, 20 years ago, we imported a load of Polish plumbers and all the rest of it to take those jobs away or to downgrade them so that they were very, they were not attractive jobs to do. The other side of it was, of course, 50% to kids to go to university. These kids knew they had no chance of doing anything like that.
Why not?
And Well, because they hadn't they couldn't.
Well, that's chicken and egg. That's chicken and egg, though, isn't it? So I don't understand why 50% of kids going to university makes 6-year-olds less likely to be able to read and write.
It's the aspirations. It's like, well, I can't do that.
But, no, but they already can't read and write. So it's not the fact that other people go to university that explains why they can't read and write.
The other side
Hang on, I want to understand it better. What's that got to do with the thing that we're talking about?
It's the poverty of aspiration.
No, I know what that means, but why would the fact that Labour introduced a policy to help more people go to university explain why other people 15 years previously were less likely to be able to read and write?
Well, that was just my... That's my perception of it.
Yeah, but I want to understand it, Graham.
Right. Because
it sounds like a really lazy denigration of a brilliant Labour policy that changed countless lives,
No, I'm saying that we should go back to the schools, Sure Start, because your previous call...
I didn't mean Sure Start. I meant higher education for families who wouldn't ordinarily have thought that it was in their reach. Should we just agree that that's got absolutely nothing to do with illiteracy among 5- and 6-year-olds? Okay, now let's look at what you said about Polish plumbers. How big a problem do you think that is for an entire demographic of white working class boys going back decades, not performing well in school?
Right. When you've got the jobs...
Because, again, that sounds like a lazy denigration of hard-working people who came here to improve their own lives and give an excuse, perhaps, to parents who weren't pulling their weight.
As I say, you've got the kids who are brought up in a household where the education is not valued.
Yeah.
So the jobs that they would tend to go to have been either given to Polish plumbers, or that's in the construction area.
This is just nonsense, though, isn't it? Because there's massive shortages in the construction industry, and there was throughout the period of European Union membership, and it's even more so now.
Brexit doesn't help with that, has it?
No. But of course, everyone who voted for Brexit shared your view of the impact that Polish plumbers had had upon the population, even though it's bogus.
Right. The other thing that has gone down over the years is kids being able to get proper apprenticeships, not talking about the office-based ones that the government has done, previous governments.
I understand that these are sort of talking points on Facebook, but they don't really stand up to evidential scrutiny, do they? Because if there's a shortage of apprenticeships, why would I be doing bad in primary school?
Well, right. One thing follows another.
Okay.
If you not got the skills right from the start, you're behind. And they can't catch up. So they're at a disadvantage right the way through school. The thing with the apprenticeship says that the employers preferred to take somebody who had skills. It's the previous experience and all the rest of it.
I hesitate to interrupt you again, but when you say things like all the rest of it, you sort of speak to a level of understanding that you don't seem to be displaying. Well, what would be, for example, all the rest of it?
Right.
I see, this is what happens when we let men on.
This is LBC.
Whether your dreams are calling you outdoors to reconnect with nature, or towards moments of pampering and relaxation to rejuvenate your soul, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences, thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50K from April 2026, making tax digital means...
you have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has...
automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. Outdo it. with Intuit QuickBooks.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
It's 12:16. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Would colour have anything to do with it? I don't know, but white working class boys are routinely more likely to underachieve than other demographics. To be fair, the numbers are relatively narrow. You're not, if you're, for example, a black working class boy, going to be running miles ahead. And until relatively recently, you were more likely to lag slightly behind. But if you take being on free school meals as the measure, you get a fairly helpful demographic divide. And the latest Department for Education figures show that 36% of white British boys on free school meals reach the expected standard in GCSE maths and English. Now, that is unlikely to have anything to do with a shortage of apprenticeships or indeed a proliferation of Polish plumbers or, God forbid, the fact that previous Labour governments have opened up tertiary education to demographics who could previously only ever dream of it. So, what is the explanation, or what are the reasons? And crucially, what does improvement look like? If you wanted to improve it, what would you do? And part of the problem here is the possibility of parents who aren't helping. Not who can't help or won't help or whatever, but who aren't helping for whatever reason. So, Sure Start is a wonderful example, the first caller reminded us of, because Sure Start helped parents help children. Did they use that phrase? They should have done. That should have been the slogan, shouldn't it? Helping parents help children. Because that is a wonderful thing you can do. And it, of course, it drives a coach and horses through my slightly lazy generalisation earlier about parents who are choosing not to be helpful. You can't be helpful if you don't know how to be helpful. It's a very right-wing trope to say, oh, children, parents don't need help with this. It was natural. It was instinctive in my dad. Of course you do. You need all these. Take all the help you can get in any area of life. And helping parents help children, as Angela Rayner beautifully explained, Alien Falkirk reminded me in an interview I conducted with her for my Full Disclosure podcast. And that's gone. We need something. I've lost this message. Can we try and find this message? Someone talking about Occam's razor, and we need an equivalent called Osborne's razor. Because when we spend time working out why things have gone badly in this country, or why things have gone a bit wrong, or got worse, so many roads lead back to George Osborne. So I say to you, why are children doing so badly in school from particular demographics? And you say to me, oh, I think we should deploy Osborne's razor at this point, James. I think we should deploy Osborne's razor because so much of it seems... It was James who sent it in. I think we need to come up with a version of Occam's razor that means the answer to a question like this is almost always austerity. And then very cleverly he adds, maybe Osborne's razor. That could be it, couldn't it? And that is a perfect example of something society can do to make things better. Help parents, help children. But what else would look like improvement in this space? 19 minutes after 12 is the time. Mark is in Tunbridge Wells. Mark, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I'd say that it's aspirations is probably the key word we're looking here. And maybe it's the fact that when it comes to working classes, can we really say that if you're having to work multiple jobs to put food on the table, for example, that you would have the same aspirations of education for your child as middle class? And being black myself,
yeah.
I say this, I think there's nuance to this, and I've heard some of your earlier callers pick up upon this, is that it's a cultural thing. Now, in terms of what we see with black boys, I think the stats are skewed, and I'll explain to you why.
Well, hang on. I will listen to your explanation, but I don't generally conduct phone-ins on the premise that the research is flawed and Mark in Tunbridge Wells knows better. All right?
No,
just so you know. I'll give you one quick run-around, but we're not conducting a phone-in based upon you know better than the experts who've conducted the research.
But I might be able to give some context.
That's what I'm going to give you a chance to demonstrate, but only a very brief chance, all right? Just so you know.
Brilliant. So basically, when people from the Caribbean, my family, came over here, we more or less generally aligned with we were put into working class areas with the general white working class population. Now, one thing that people from the Caribbean who have in common with the white British working class or white population, which people from Africa and Asia do not. it's the language. We speak English. And so, obviously, culturally, I think that, you could find a link, because obviously we've, mixed better, as it were, with the white working classes. But what that's meant is that, generally, because of the class factor in this country, aspirations have been low. Because of what you've also mentioned earlier, because of education, the systematic institutional racism within education back in the day, that's played out to what you highlighted earlier, that it was black working class boys of before.
So that's what one of the reasons, then, you remove the racism and you actually have a sort of levelling out of the black and white working class experience.
Nearly, because black Caribbean's experience in this country is completely different to African people.
Yeah, so you didn't mean the research was skewed, which is why I'm glad that I only jumped halfway down your throat. You just meant that black is an unhelpful distinction in one very specific context, because the overall numbers still hold true.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and so what's happened is that because of black Caribbean people came here in the 50s, the 60s, I think people from West Africa came here over in the late 70s and the 80s. And so what's happened is in culturally different households, such as the African household, especially West African households and Asian households, education is front and center of everything. You must be a doctor, you must be a lawyer, and that's not played out in Caribbean households. Now, I'll give you a further example. I'm actually a barrister. I'm obviously black. Most of my colleagues who are black at the bar are generally West African. They're Nigerian or Ghanaian. I'm in a minority of a minority at the bar with other Caribbean lawyers. Sure. Everyone in my undergrad, when I did my undergrad 10 years ago, I was the only black British Caribbean boy, or male, I should say, studying for a law degree. Everyone else was either, it was women from black British Caribbean, but I was the only male. It was either West African British born students or people from the Caribbean heritage. They'd actually travelled in for the Caribbean and got visas. I was the only one, and I noticed this. And so this is an ongoing theme. So if you was to separate the demographics, which I think Lamy has done in his Lamy review, and he's specifically identified how black African students are doing better than black Caribbean heritage and mixed race kids are doing worse. I don't think you'd see much difference, and I think it is a working class problem. And so the people that have mixed with working class people the best is Caribbean people, because we speak the same language. You know, my name's a lot of our names are English on paper, you know, colonialism. We're not going to go into the boy with the history of that. But
let me nudge you back then, if I may. I understand the point that you're making. But give me the why of it then. What would it be about to use your words, the lack of aspiration in those households, whatever colour their skin may be, that creates a big enough phenomenon for it to become demographically significant? And you're obviously an exception to this particular rule, so that might give you a better perspective on it than people who are victims of this particular rule. But why would you be less likely to be aspirational in those two groups, the white and black, or the white and black Caribbean working class families, than you would be if you were in the same socioeconomic group as the family around the corner, but not in the same ethnic group?
I think basically it was when you have to make ends meet, obviously things have got so much more expensive for working classes. And I know your caller from the Wirral kind of touched upon it. He didn't come across and put it maybe in the right way, but I'd go as far as to say the social contract for working class people has been broken in this country. And so,
but for all working class people.
Well, for all working class people, however, we're talking about people that have come from Africa, and I'm just saying not all, but generally the standards of living out there were a lot worse. And you find that the more after the Caribbean immigrants, people immigrated for certain countries for a much better life. And if you look at what's relative poverty is like and what the UK living standards are like, people are able to make their money stretch, I find. Whereas if you think that if you're accustomed to a certain lifestyle,
interesting. Yeah, okay.
If you're accustomed to a certain lifestyle, working class, that's suddenly been stripped away. Now look, before you was entitled to a house, the state would step in, there were jobs. Just go back to the days, James, when only one member of the family, the dad, just needed to go to work, a mum could stay at home. and look after the kids. Those days are done. Do you understand?
So but there's two ways of responding to that, isn't there? That you either, as you posit, you either kind of give up, or you work twice as hard because things have got twice as difficult. And it can go either way. And I don't think that is necessarily linked to class or ethnicity. What would you do? How would you make things better? Because that's the bit that often gets missed out of these conversations.
I think apprenticeships, and I think the government needs to do more to just level the playing field. And
I'm not. Apprenticeships don't answer the question of what you're doing in schools to make children do better in school.
I think there just needs to be more support. I do believe
that that's not an answer. That's a politician's answer. But there needs to be more support. I mean, what is the support? Is what I'm asking you.
More support for the parents to help with the education of the kids. My wife's a secondary school teacher. She's head of year, and she finds that the children that she saved the most, because she teaches in a rather deprived part of London.
Sure.
And the children that succeed the most are the ones with the most parental input. And so, if there's more support to inspire children, even to read, I know I listen to Nick Ferrari, and he's got this Encourage Your Kids to Read program. Yeah. And it really starts with the simple things. It really starts with home. And you find that the kids where education first, especially the West African and the Asian families where you will be a lawyer, doctor, they're making their kids read every day because they're.
How does she, in the case of your wife, help? Because the lazy temptation is to presume that the parents who aren't doing all the things that you are describing are feckless or work shy or irresponsible.
No, that's not true.
I know it's not true, and any more than it was true when black boys were doing worst in school and certain people queued up to suggest that it was because their parents were feckless or work shy or irresponsible. Mm. So you've got the parent who could. They may not even know that they want to do more, but they could if they would, or they would if they could, or they should if they would if they could. How would that support work? And you can't say sure start because someone's already said that. How would you reach into that family and turn it into a place where parents help children more effectively because they love them just as much.
But I think school intervention, right? So kids that are failing, what my wife does when she's ahead of year, she'll go, the kids that have fallen behind, she'll actually go and do home visits to see what support that she can personally give back by the school to bring that child up to speed.
And that's a matter of choice for her, because that's not part of her terms and conditions or her contract. That's just her being brilliant at her job and going above and beyond what she is required to do.
But if you try to bring the parents along with you, I think inspire the parents, put instead of all this screen time and I know kids will be tempted by social media, but if there's more of a campaign to really bring reading a book with your kids back into the forefront, advertising campaigns, you know, like no child should be left behind. And it really starts, I know you've got this brilliant phrase, Occam's razor. The most simple solution,
That's why I was pushing you, though, because the problem is that it has to be systemic. It can't just rely on brilliant teachers like your wife or really super committed people who derive such joy and satisfaction from changing young lives that they go out and do more than they are required to do, either contractually or professionally. That's where politicians have to rewrite the rules of what these engagements look like. And that's why I'm, I think impatient would be the wrong word, but that's why I'm so enthusiastic about nailing down more substantive suggestions than just over, you know, repeating over and over again words like aspiration or support. Thank you, Mark. You're brilliant. It is 12:30. Tim Humphrey has your headlines.
The Chancellor is preparing to set out plans to protect the UK economy against the rising cost of oil and gas. Rachel Reeves is expected to promise to crack down on unfair price rises. A man who strangled a mother of two and buried her body in a shallow grave on the edge of Coventry has been cleared of murder. 42-year-old Mohammed Dernian, who killed Rianne Coulson last May, has been convicted of manslaughter. Girl Guiding has said transgender girls must leave the organisation by September the 6th. It's following an announcement in December that membership would be restricted to girls and young women. LBC weather, rain moving southeast with colder conditions following behind, windy with gales in the north and a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
Here's a bright idea. Let Wix see how much you could save on your electricity bills. With Wix Solar, our team handles everything under the sun, from design to the perfect installation of your solar panels. We're proud as a peacock to be rated excellent on Trustpilot, so you can feel confident your solar installation is in safe hands. Book your free solar appointment today at wix.co.uk. Wix Solar, a name you can trust with service you can rely on.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £43 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
33 minutes after 12. I've had some information brought to my attention regarding Nelson's column and Trafalgar Square that is just... I need to triple check that it's completely true, because if it is, it's so on the money regarding so many different issues, not least the reason why Trafalgar Square was in the news last week after the bigoted idiot Nick Timothy called for a prohibition of public prayer for one very small and specific section of our society. But if this is correct, what I have been told, then not only does it explain why a certain type of right-winger hates history being taught properly in schools, as in the whole of history, not just the Rule Britannia, Britannia rules the waves, or indeed waves the rules, if you prefer, version of history, but also why bigoted idiots are so often displaying levels of ignorance that they are themselves quite catastrophically unaware of. 12:34 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I don't know why. Well, I do know why. I told you why. I think it's why. I mean, maybe I am just a wonderful person. I sound like Donald Trump now. That can't be good. I'm so interested in education and the relationship between education and aspiration, and I think it's because I'm adopted. If you're just joining us, I mention this most times when we talk about this subject, but I only realised relatively late in life that I've always had a kind of consciousness of the unadopted me, as in the me I would be if I hadn't been adopted by wonderful parents who prioritised my education over their own comfort at times. I mean, paying school fees that... In retrospect, I realised they could only just afford for my sister and I, because they came from backgrounds, my maternal grandfather in particular, were absolutely dedicated to education, 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 being the golden ticket that takes you to places you would never get to unless you were born privileged, unless you were born with inherited wealth and privilege. And so I've always had this subconscious awareness of the unadopted me, and that is why I think I've got this extraordinary passion for the improving nature of education, and a fascination with what would happen to clever kids who didn't get it. And of course I jump from the selfish question about what would happen to clever kids who didn't get it to the broader question: what happens to all kids who don't get the education they deserve? How do you improve it? And then you find the kids who seem to be suffering the most from that lack, that absence, and at the moment they are, by a whisker, white working class boys. So there are some specific questions about what it is about being white, what it is about being working class, or what it is about being a boy. But broadly, the question then becomes, what can society do differently to make these imbalances and these inequalities smaller? I don't think you're ever going to eradicate them altogether, not in a country that has a royal family, but what can you do to make them smaller? Shola is in Birmingham. Shola, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Hello. My son passed his GCSEs last year, and, you know, I made sure that he went to the school provided free after-school lessons as well as weekend lessons. And what I noticed when I was picking him up,
yeah,
there was white girls, Asian kids, boy and girls, as well as a little bit of black boys,
yeah,
more black girls, but there was no white boys. And I thought, well, you know, okay, parents evening again, when you see, there wasn't a large amount of white parents attending. So I thought, well, okay, I mentioned it to the teachers. They said, yeah, you know, it's a sad case that they don't turn up. Spoke to some of my son's friends, and I said, you know, why don't you go to the lesson? Yeah. Oh, no, it's not cool. It's for nerds. So, well, my son's not a nerd. You hang around him. He's, you know, he's popular.
Yeah.
But I made sure he went to the lessons. Anyway, at the end, he was the only one out of his group of friends.
Who were mostly white? The group of friends are mostly white.
There's a mixture.
Okay.
But he was, out of all of them, he was the only one what passed all his GCSEs. And one of the boys, when I was dropping him to football, says to me, oh, I only need to get a 2 or a 3.
Yeah.
We're aiming for a 2 or a 3 in the GCSEs. So I was like, you what? He said, oh, school said a 2 and a 3 is a pass. And yeah. I said, well, that's not what you need to aim for. Aim higher. It might be a pass, but you need to aim higher. They were said, well, 2 and a 3, that's what they said, so that's what we're going to aim for. So they had no motivation to look higher because they've been told 2 and a 3 is a pass. And also, the day of collecting their GCSE results, there was colleges in the hall, you know, recruiting and saying, oh, you know, never mind if you never get the grades. You can come to us if you've got a 2 and a 3, no problem. You can repeat.
There's no motivation. There's such a delicate balance, Shola, isn't there, between the children who will work their socks off and get a 2 or a 3 and not wanting them to feel crushed and doomed, and the children who could get much better than a 2 or a 3 but don't, because we've put so much effort into destigmatizing the 2 and the 3. It's such a it's a minefield, that it really
there
is. But you know these kids and I don't, so you know they could have done much better than that, but they didn't
could've
see
done much better.
They didn't see any need to try. And you've also highlighted something that Michael in Greenwich touched on Friday when we were talking about the American voter and the fact that many of them still can't see the reality of Donald Trump, despite all of the evidence to the contrary. And he talked about a sort of form of anti-intellectualism, as if education is suspect, as if it's something for the freaks and the weirdos. And I think you're touching on that as well, aren't you?
Well, it was also, just a few weeks ago, he was out playing football with some of his old school friends, because now he's gone on to sixth form. And the group of them, after football, one of them says to him, which was a white kid, said, oh, such and such, my son's name. Don't you feel a way that you've passed all your GCSEs and you didn't get any failures? Because, well, at least with me, when I done the day of my geography GCSE, I got high. So when I have grandkids, I can look back and tell my grandkids, oh, the day of my geography, I got high and, I never passed. My son said, but that's not something to be happy about.
Nor is it something that we can extrapolate beyond those two boys. I don't think that is a black experience or a white experience. It's just it's one wombat and one good student having a conversation that most people will roll their eyes at, isn't it?
Exactly. But the thing is, he got so much hits on his TikTok for showing the day of his results when he got all U's and 1s.
He
put it on his TikTok and he got so much hit, so he's proud of it, so he thinks it's a big accomplishment than to pass.
Oh, Lord,
you've
done me.
And that's the mentality of these young boys
today. You've done me. Yeah, and again, I don't think that there is a black-white issue there.
No, it's not a black-white issue.
No, I know, but it is very much celebrating ignorance.
Yes.
There's no nice way of putting it. That poor kid.
Yeah.
He's got no one in his life to say, look, clicks. Notwithstanding,
so
you absolute
sad
wombat. Look what you've just weed up.
And I said to my son, oh, you know, sixth form's for nerds. No, why would you want to go and do that?
Oh, I was like, what? Gosh.
But it's the mentality of most of the kids today. And their parents are not really, you know, having, I don't know, but I'm presuming, are you having conversations with your kids?
I don't know.
Because
and remember
mentality,
that I got chucked out of my public school for for drug use. And so if he'd gone, that boy there had gone to a school like mine, he would have still come out with very good O-levels and A-levels, even if he had got high on occasion. Yes. Although, admittedly, Shola, perhaps not on the day of the actual or the morning of the actual exam.
Yes.
And that, I'm making that point only for class reasons. I need to demonstrate again, anybody thinking, oh, well, that kid's doomed, that kid never had a chance, that kid's taking drugs, that kid's a joke, that kid's a waste. Gone to a school like mine wouldn't have held him back. Maybe in the short term, but he still would have come out believing that the world was his lobster, as Delboy once said. A little bit of business now. 12:41 is the time. You're listening to, as you know, James O'Brien on LBC. We missed a trick yesterday. And this is a trick I don't like to miss. It's a trick, in fact, I rarely miss. If you weren't listening yesterday, we took a call on the subject of the Strait of Hormuz from a chap who normally confines his contributions to Mystery Hour. He's a former seaman in the Merchant Navy who has gone on to be an instructor of Merchant Navy seamen, and clearly is possessed the qualifications far beyond what he had modestly let on to us, because we were talking about the Strait of Hormuz, and he rang in to make a contribution I'll share with you shortly. I don't think he even mentioned that he had written about specifically the mines in the Strait of Hormuz. So if you weren't listening yesterday, here's a little reminder of what Ash in Northampton had to say when we were discussing the ins and outs, if you pardon the pun, of the Strait of Hormuz.
The reason that some of the vessels can get through with Iranian help is they know where the mines are. Right. So they can just lead people through. So you kind of have two options. One, get very, very close to the Iranian regime, get them to take you through on the proviso that you will take no other ships with you. You're talking about weighing up the consequences of getting into bed with a regime like Iran to satisfy the economic interests or to go to war to stop this. Mines are so difficult to find these days. I know everyone's got this idea of like big floating like blobs in the ocean. You're talking about like little plates that sit on the bottom of the ocean with pressure sensors.
Right.
They're incredibly difficult to find. To be able to find them, you need to have won the air war. Mine hunters themselves do not have the capability to fight an air war while hunting for mines. It's not possible.
So, I mean, there you have it. And indeed, Ash has written an article literally looking at the different types of mines and the threats that they pose to shipping, which you can read if you follow me or indeed him on Blue Sky or him on LinkedIn, because I posted it from my Blue Sky account earlier today. And of course, what an awful lot of you pointed out to me after that call was that it had Ray Liotta written all over it. Ray Liotta is a message recorded by the late, great Ray Liotta to recognise contributions to this programme from people whose qualifications are, frankly, obscenely good, whose qualifications go far beyond what you would expect from a booked professional guest, let alone a caller, a normal caller. And that's why I have broken the habit of a lifetime and invited Ash back on the programme today. I hope you weren't too busy, Ash.
No, I haven't. I had a lot of questions being asked over the last couple of
days. Yeah, just, I mean, take it from me, as someone who's had probably a little bit more traffic on social media than you're used to. You don't have to answer all of them.
Well, the questions are all really good, but they're just sensible questions. People just want to know what the dangers are, and that's sort of what I do. So
it is, which is why we should have given you a Ray Liotta yesterday, because I kind of got so carried away with the quality of your contribution that I forgot to remark upon how privileged we were to have somebody so qualified to contribute to a conversation in such an incredibly expert fashion. So thank you very much, Ash.
Thank you.
Have you had a Ray Liotta before? I'm thinking you have.
I did, the very first time I phoned into Mystery Hour.
Yeah, so they even get it on Mystery Hour, but you never get... So they're much rarer in real life, as you know. Mystery Hour is like a kind of fantasy alternative universe. This is your first, and I suspect not necessarily your last ever Ray Liotta outside of the parameters of Mystery Hour.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
There you go, mate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you. It's 12:45. If you missed Ash in Northampton's call yesterday, you can listen to the entire thing on James O'Brien's whole show podcast from about 10:40 a.m. on the LBC app or the Global Player. That's yesterday's show. The time now is 12:46.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Rachel Reeves tells MPs the government is ensuring our oil supplies and commits to renewables, but will there be enough help for bill payers? And time's up for trans girls in guiding.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself. Hi, Clampy. How's it going? Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely. Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore I. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
I'm Natasha, and this is my NHS story. I went to the GP because I'd found a lump in my breast, and the GP referred me to a CDC centre. It was just really welcoming from the moment I arrived. To just be reassured all in one day was fantastic.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
I don't know what this gets filed under. It's not any, that doesn't really fit any of our features, does it, this? It's not a missed information, because you couldn't have been expected to know it, I don't think. But it is, I suppose, one of the benefits of Blue Sky, which is the only social media platform that I use now, and a very jolly account under the name of Christian G brought this to my attention, and I've double checked it with very august authorities, actually. So you remember when the bigoted idiot Nick Timothy was complaining about people saying prayers last week? I should probably specify Muslims saying prayers in Trafalgar Square, and that it was, what would he describe it, as an act of domination, despite the fact that you were more than welcome to go along and join in if you wanted to, and that the organisation responsible for arranging the iftar was one that its very mission statement describes being dedicated to improving relations between different communities. But some people don't want relations between different communities to be improved. They want certain communities to be punished. In the case of the bigoted idiot Nick Timothy, prohibiting prayer, prohibiting public prayer, particularly in Trafalgar Square, because it is a place of such significance. What's the highest thing in Trafalgar Square? And I'll give you a clue now. It's not the lad that Shola's son went to school with. Thank you very much. It's Trafalgar's, Nelson's column. What's the highest thing on the column? Nelson. What's the highest thing on Nelson? It's his hat, isn't it? And what is the highest thing on Nelson's hat? Admiral Nelson's hat on top of the statue, on top of the column, smack in the middle of Trafalgar Square. It's that little sticky up bit. Yeah? So now things get really interesting. It's called a chelenk, and it's the highest military honour that a potentate from the past could give. It was usually awarded to admirals. It would be a maritime honour of exceptional distinction. Now, Nelson, Horatio Nelson, received it in 1798 after his sterling performance. I'm going to turn into a football commentator just for a couple of minutes. After his sterling performance at the Battle of the Nile, where, as you'll remember, he destroyed or captured 13 individual French ships. And this marked the very first time that a chelenk had been given to an admirable from a background other than the background of the potentate, what made the award. And Nelson treasured it so much that he wore it pretty much permanently on his ceremonial hat. He added it to his coat of arms. Of all the things he ever owned, this was the thing that he displayed, or the honour at least, that he displayed most proudly. So, there it is, the highest thing in Trafalgar Square, the chelenk, all 13 rays of it, studded with diamonds. 13, because that was the exact number of French ships destroyed or captured at the Battle of the Nile. It was precise military accounting, as Christian G explains in this marvellous Blue Sky post, set in diamonds. And why is this relative to or relevant to the bigoted idiot Nick Timothy and his call last week for Muslims to be prohibited from praying in Trafalgar Square? Well, you've probably worked it out by now. The award was given by the Ottoman Sultan Selim III, awarded it to Horatio Nelson in 1798. So it is, if you like, a Muslim medal, a Muslim honour, a Muslim military award. On top of Horatio Nelson's hat, on top of Horatio Nelson, on top of Nelson's column, in the middle of Trafalgar Square, where the bigoted idiot Nick Timothy opined last week that Muslims should not be allowed to pray. So, I mean, I suppose in order to be consistent, he would either have to hop in a time machine, go back to 1798 and tell Sultan Selim not to give it to Admiral Nelson, or he'd have to start calling for it to be knocked off the top of the statue, because, I mean, it could be construed as an act of domination. What an absolute wombat that man is. Sheesh. And that's before you even look at his CV regarding his service to Theresa May as both Home Secretary and Prime Minister. That's it. That's the story. I love that. And it's not something that we've got a jingle for. I can't think of the way that it fits into anything in particular. I have, however, got a quick missed information for you before we take a couple more calls on the question of getting working class young people to do better at school. And here it is.
Missed information.
Now, you've been aware, I think, in recent years of how desperate the Daily Mail and the Daily Telegraph and others are to report upon the surge in support for far-right parties across Europe. The kind of broadcasters that might routinely tickle the toes of Nigel Farage, the kind of newspapers that might routinely publish all sorts of nonsense by people like the bigoted idiot Nick Timothy. So you probably didn't notice that this weekend the far-right party in France, the National Rally, failed to take any major cities, despite predictions in the mayoral elections, because they've had a bit of a nightmare. It's not by any stretch of the imagination the end of the story or anything like that, but had they done well, it would be everywhere, and people would be pretending that it proves some sort of widespread dissatisfaction with the status quo, rather than the fact that the far right gets a free ride from the media in many European countries, because the alternative would be for people to realise who is really responsible for their straitened living circumstances and the fact that they don't get paid as much as their parents did. So, missed information simply, Le Pen's party had a bit of a nightmare in the latest mayoral elections in France, but you won't be getting that reported on anything like the scale you would have done in this country, in our far-right media, if they had done brilliantly well.
Missed information.
Thank you, Emily. Carl is in Exeter to steer us back to the question of the working class and education and how you can improve the latter for the former. Carl, what would you like to say?
Well, yeah, okay. So I called in originally to say why, and then your reporter, then your researcher said, "Well, what's the answer?"
Yes. So doesn't that annoy you? Isn't that annoying?
It's annoying when I tell you to do things.
You should just be able to ring in, shoot your mouth off, and not have to account for your opinions in any way, shape, or form.
Well, that's what you do. So,
exactly,
you know.
That. Precisely. Go on.
Okay. Three things. And my background is I'm a civil servant, work for the education department. I've been a chair of governors at a school and stuff like that. So I sort of know what I'm talking about, but not very much. The first thing is that you need a relentless attendance monitoring thing.
Yeah.
So you've really got to get people into school every day, all the time. And you need to show where anybody's... What you can show is that they're falling behind because they don't go to school.
Yeah.
And they don't have it. So you've got to have relentless attendance.
I'm conscious of the time. And this doesn't accommodate, of course, the growing number of children who are not choosing to avoid school. They literally can't get into school for a whole bunch of reasons. But you're talking about the kids who are reachable.
Yeah.
And whose families could do more to get them into school. But again, before people get upset, I know that there are thousands of families who do every day their very best and don't manage to do it because the child isn't very well.
Yeah. Second one is daily literacy intervention for anybody, especially boys, who's falling behind.
Yeah.
And that has to come to school. You can't say, oh, no, we do English 3 times a week and that's where they're thing. It has to be daily. Yeah. You've got to do something with them. And then the third thing, which addresses the other stuff you're talking about, is you've got to have consistent family contact.
Yeah.
And you need to go back to those families where the children are failing and work with them. And the problem with all of those three is it costs money.
Yeah, exactly that.
To do this, you need an attendance monitoring manager in the school who's dealing with it like casework. It's not something like we're going to do attendance. You've got to have somebody who's going out to visit those places that they can't and giving them work and keeping them engaged and everything like that. You've got to have teachers who are doing reading and language catch-up all the time. And then you've got to have some really good structured parental engagement that's not preachy, that's short, regular, with clear guidance and help. And all of that costs money.
Did you do this in the school where you were a governor?
We did some of it.
And the results were visible from space, I presume.
The results were visible. Our Fisher family uplift jumped up 1 or 2 whole places for those families that we did it with. And we only had the money to do it with a limited number of failing families and things like that. But it worked. And I preached about it and I talked about it all over the place. And then we had a Conservative government who took all of our money away.
Oh, you've just used Osborne's razor. I can't believe it. Yeah. Every road leads to George Osborne, who currently shouldn't be too mean to George Osborne because at the moment he's only got 17 highly paid jobs.
I know, but
how did you pick the families? How did you pick the families for it?
We worked with our teachers to find the families that were most in need, the kids that we thought we could definitely reach.
So it's doable.
Kids that and it's just doable.
Oh, how frustrating!
But it costs money.
Of course it does.
Every school needs 4 or 5 people who aren't teaching doing this.
More people in schools, more diversity of duty, more specialists, more money. And there it is. And, of course, the engines of influence that I talk about on this programme every day are still trying to persuade you that the problem in our society is not the people who've got all the money and whose fortunes grow exponentially every year at the moment, but it's the people who have possibly got even less than you. Thank you, Carl. That's it from me for another day. Should we do it all again tomorrow from 10? I will if you do. Let's see who turns up, shall we? If you missed any of it, you can listen back on the Global Player app or the LBC app. It's all free. All the news, all the videos, all the opinions, all the podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily and Full Disclosure, which I haven't played a clip of this week, but it's Jeremy King, the restaurateur. But don't be put off by the fact that you may not have been to any of his restaurants, because A, he's a fascinating man nevertheless. Indeed, did you know that he sat for 2 Lucian Freud portraits? And B, he's a bit like the conversation we've just been having about education. He's a great democratizer. Just listen to it. It's a brilliant interview. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. I'll be there at 10 tomorrow morning, cheering you on as I get ready for work. At 3 today, trans girls must leave girl guiding groups by September. The law says sex means biological sex in such groups. Is that fair when it boils down to the day-to-day life of groups like that, girls like that? Let's talk, though, to start with, about what Rachel Reeves has just told the Commons. She says the government is ensuring we have oil supplies, commits to renewables still, but will there be enough help for bill payers? What we do know is it won't look anything like the widespread help that was given by Liz Truss when she was Prime Minister after the Ukraine war began. So, what do we do? Do we give more people as much money as possible? Or is it is the government right to be more cautious this time, less generous this time?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Chancellor has told MPs energy security is national security. Rachel Reeves has been outlining plans to crack down on unfair oil and gas price rises as a result of the Iran war. She says the government aims to be responsive to a changing world and told the House contingency planning is underway for energy bill support for those who need it most.
Mr. Speaker, this is not a war that we started, nor is it a war that we joined, unlike the advice of the parties opposite. But it is a war that will have an impact on our country.
More missiles have fallen in Tel Aviv and Tehran this morning as mixed messages emerge about peace talks to end the conflict in Iran. Donald Trump claims there's a very good chance of peace, but the Iranian president says talks are fake news. Sources suggest Pakistan has offered to mediate between both sides. Defence analyst Michael Clark says American peace envoy Steve Witkoff is involved as well.
Because he's a very nice man, but I don't think he picks up on the show-stopping details that he hears. And so he comes away from discussions, whether they're in person or online, with a rather rosy view of what he's heard. And he gives a rosy view to Trump, and Trump gives an even rosier view to the press.
A man's been cleared of murdering a mother of two who he strangled and buried in a shallow grave on the edge of Coventry. 42-year-old Mohammed Dernian, who killed Rianne Coulson last May, has been convicted of manslaughter. His friend, 39-year-old Adam Moore, was convicted of helping him dispose of Rianne's body. Publishing price lists for pet owners and a £21 cap on prescription fees are among reforms for the veterinary industry being set out by the competition regulator. The CMA wants to try to improve transparency. Transgender girls must leave girl guiding by early September. The move follows an announcement in December saying it's limiting its membership to girls and young women. Girl guiding says it's a difficult decision, but it's a result of a 2025 Supreme Court ruling, which said the words woman and sex in the Equality Act of 2010 refer to a biological woman and biological sex. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 18 points at 99.11. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.16. LBC weather, rain moving southeast with colder conditions following behind, windy with gales in the north and a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Rather helpfully, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves, has just finished a statement in the House of Commons about a number of things that flow from this war in Iran and the Middle East. She has included in it a very clear message that whilst there is great concern about helping us through the extra costs that may come about, and in many cases already coming about because of the oil crisis, it won't be anything like as generous as the trust package that we got back in September of 2022. Let's go through some of this with Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor. It's more or less what we expected her to say on that particular issue, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. So an update from the government after that COBRA meeting that was held yesterday, the Prime Minister, the Chancellor, other top ministers getting together to decide whether to intervene over the war in Iran and whether they need to create a similar sort of bailout to the likes that we saw back in 2022 when oil prices spiked after the invasion of Ukraine. Now, I think you're right in terms of that sort of sentiment from Rachel Reeves. She's basically saying today that she does plan to support some of us with a bailout on energy bills, but it will be for, quote, those who need it the most. So it was not going to be for everybody. She spent her statement this afternoon basically attacking the last government for spending too much money. She says that's a check that we are still paying back now, and essentially it would not be the right decision to essentially pay for everybody, a bit like that happened before. But her main sort of argument today was actually, which is going to come into effect now, is that there will be new powers given to the CMA Markets Watchdog. She says that will help to clamp down on companies using the war to make excessive profits.
And she mentioned heating oil in particular at the head of that statement, didn't she?
Yes, so the government's already announced that they will be stepping in with £53 million worth of support for people who are already on heating oil. So they will be, again, those will be people who they believe need it the most. So it will be those, it won't be for everybody, it'll be a discretionary fund that you can apply to if you are struggling to pay for your heating oil costs. And like I say, it won't be for everybody. But the government very much seems to be taking a bit of a different approach with this one, Sheila. They don't think that it's going to be something they need to do right now, because obviously they've got the price cap that's in place until June. They say that that is meaning that they can basically take a bit of a wait and see approach. But equally, it's an interesting question that is going on in government for how far they should be intervening. It's of course going to affect absolutely everybody. And she basically was talking about the idea that she won't be doing it on the same scale that Liz Truss did before. I think we can hear a little bit of what she had to say there. She revealed that she is planning for some kind of intervention on energy bills, but it won't be the same scale as Liz Truss.
I can confirm to the House that contingency planning is taking place for every eventuality, so that we can keep costs down for everyone and provide support for those who need it most, acting within our ironclad fiscal rules to keep inflation and interest rates as low as possible. Mr. Speaker, this is not a war that we started, nor is it a war that we joined, unlike the advice of the parties opposite. But it is a war that will have an impact on our country.
And Sheila, here was what she had to say about those new powers that will be given to the CMA Markets Watchdog.
Today, I can announce that we are going further to make sure that the Competition and Markets Authority have the powers that they need that were denied to them by the previous government to detect and to crack down on price gouging, bringing in a new anti-profiteering framework and considering time-limited, targeted powers for the CMA and other regulators. This week, the Business Secretary and I will convene the Regulators' Council to discuss their work to protect consumers. Because let me say again, this government will not tolerate any company exploiting this crisis at consumers' expense.
But the Tory Shadow Chancellor Mel Stribe was responding for the Conservatives. He hit out at wider public spending, which he says is further driving up costs for households.
Where is the control of public spending? Yeah. Where is the renewed resolve to grasp the welfare bill, to get people off benefits and into work? Yeah. I will tell you, Mr. Speaker, it is nowhere, because the Right Honourable Lady is a captive of her own backbenchers.
And on the other side of the political equation, we've also been hearing in the last hour or so, our Deputy Political Editor Aggie Shombray has been speaking with Sir Ed Davey at the Lib Dem campaign launch. He has said that Labour should be more generous with their help on cost of living. So he's urging the government for a bit of a